your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Good morning, you beautiful bunch of fuckers, and welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. It is Wednesday, March 13th. We are here live. It's time for Destination Health. We're going to open up the phone lines right now, so start dialing. I've got some things I want to talk about this morning, but we'll get to calls pretty quick. So go ahead and line them up. The number to join us, if you're dialing a phone, 319-527-6791. I see some calls coming in already. I love that. You can also just hit that dial now button on your app. That will get you in here as well. We'll be here for the next 3 hours or until we run out of questions. So it's all up to you. All right. I had a weird night last night. I got a lot going on, getting ready to travel. The CMC's coming up. I'm going to talk about that for just a minute. It was just one of those nights. I fell asleep pretty easily, but only slept, I think, about a half hour and then woke up, and my body felt like I had slept all night. I was wide awake. I came down and started doing some reading and going back over a lot of research, and the next thing I know, I looked up, and it was like 3:30 in the morning, so I did not get a whole lot of sleep this morning, but that's all right. I don't feel that bad. Feeling pretty good, actually, for not getting a whole lot of sleep. So, let's talk about the CMC real quick, and then we'll get to this topic. So, CMC 2.0, Certified Master Carrier. We have our kickoff of the program next week. Actually, it's a week from today. I can't believe we're just 7 days away. In fact, Lisa sent me a reminder this morning to talk about this. And the reminder said, tell people Friday is the last day to sign up. And I thought, why are we cutting off signups on Friday? And then I realized because the event's next week, it got here really fast. So Friday is the last day. If you want to be in the live program at NETS, and you do want to be there, I promise you, you got to get signed up by Friday. I will see. I'm not sure how many seats we have left. But either way, get on over there, go to truckingshow.com. That is the website for the Mid-America Truck Show. Find the CMC. It's not hard to find. Look under events. It's all over the place, really. You should be able to find it pretty easy once you get to the website. Go ahead and get registered. I will tell you, this is by far the most value we have ever delivered in a seminar of any length. Remember, value is not just price. It's price and how much you are getting for that price. We've never done anything like this. And I will tell you, the reason we are able to do it like this is because we have a sponsor who is covering all the bills. So we don't have to bring in a ton of revenue to do this. We need to bring in some. And the bigger reason, we talked about getting maybe one more sponsor and then making it free. And I decided against it. It was interesting that Matt's is a part of this. This is an official part of the Mid-America Truck Show now. I'm pretty proud of that. I love having them as a partner. It makes a lot of sense. And this is something that we are all looking at as a long-term thing. We will be doing this at Matt's every year. In fact, I believe when we open the show on Wednesday morning, I think I saw something somewhere that the founder of the show, the Young family, Toby Young, will be joining us to talk about the program going forward. So this is a big shift in how Matt's wants to operate the truck show. That's how this whole idea got started. I was on a space yesterday, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it was the show. We were talking about truck shows. Yeah, I think it was. We were talking with Pete. And, there used to be a lot of truck shows I used to go to. I think there was a time I was hitting almost 6 truck shows a year. And lately I've been down to 1, maybe 2. And I even talked about how it's hard to justify the cost for a vendor to go to those couple. It has gotten outrageously expensive. They're just a major hassle. I think somebody brought it up. You have to deal with the unions. That might have been Bruce. We could go on and on and on the stories of what a hassle it is dealing with these everybody you have to deal with in order to be a vendor at these shows. And then to put on a seminar like we're trying to do was impossible. I tried it for a couple of years. There was just no truck show that would work with us on this. So Mid-America Truck Show, being the biggest, is not going away. We may lose all the others, but this one is not going away. Now, one time they talked about only doing the show every other year. But I think what Toby has decided on, and this is why we're partnering with them and a part of this, is that he wants to bring as much trucking, not just trucking, logistics, transportation, information and vendors and education to Louisville and really start to make it maybe the whole week and give people the opportunity to be able to plan for one place once a year and get as much information as possible. And I think it's a really good idea. I really do. I would much rather block out that whole week, maybe even the weekend before and after, and be able to attend multiple events, make multiple connections, learn a lot. I really think it's a great idea. And that's why we wanted to partner with them. And I'm really glad we're a part of this. Get signed up. Friday is the last day. We would love to see you there. I am really looking forward to doing this one. And then the CMC 2.0, which is now Certified Master Carrier, is going to be a year-long program. You will always have the option of, I shouldn't say always, that's a very strong word. In the plan right now, you will have the option of attending the live event at Louisville. Oh, I want to get back. I got sidetracked on all the value and why this was our best value. The original CMC I started in 2005, and it was just me. And I would get up on stage and I would talk as long as people would listen a day or two days, and just try to cram as much information into 2 days as I could. And honestly, I was doing like 12-hour days. We were starting at 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't take a lot of breaks. We had lunch in the room usually, and we were going till 8 o'clock at night. And it was a lot of information. And then we just kept growing the program. But that 2-day event in 2005 was $750. With reasonable inflation added to that, not even the kind of stuff we're seeing now, that would easily be a $1,000 seminar. Most business seminars that I see now today, if they are 2 full days, you're probably looking at $2,000. That is just the norm in the business seminar world these days. Our event, which is a day and a half, is $100. That's it. We've never done anything like that. Not this long, this in-depth, this much information. This is the best value in any trucking seminar ever. So don't miss this one. Get signed up. Then you will have the opportunity to also sign up for the year-long program. The CMC is going to go on as a virtual training event for an entire year. And one of the questions I get a lot, and I've always, ever since I set up the CMC, this is one of the biggest questions I get, and it's one of the few questions I really can't answer completely. And the question is, what am I going to learn? Well, I don't know. For this one, it's going to take me a day and a half to to tell you everything you're going to learn and teach it to you. So it's really hard to outline it accurately. But here's what I can say now. The entire year-long program, if you are a part of it, the day and a half next week at Matt's, and then the year-long program following, I am really teaching everything I have learned about trucking, about being a single truck owner operator. That's really the way you should start. And then if you decide, building that into a fleet. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but the amount of information and material I have and everything I've learned in all these years is really incredible. That's why we decided to make this a year-long program. It's the only way to get this out. And I will tell you, there is nothing else anywhere like this. That is a guarantee. Nothing else in the industry. There aren't many good seminars for owner-operators anyway, or programs or courses, but there is nothing that even comes close to this. And we've managed, again, because of sponsors and some other things, to keep the cost of this incredibly cheap, inexpensive. Our CMC, when it was a five-day program, was $1,800 a person. This, with probably, I would say, 3 to 4 times more information than that five-day CMC, is $1,000. You are never going to find anything like this. Five-day business seminars are pretty rare. Our CMC was one of the few. And I've attended some. Anthony Robbins put on one year that was really good. That was $10,000 a ticket. And there were 1,000 people at that event. It's incredible. This is the best value you are ever going to find. And if you want to learn as much as you can possibly learn about owning one truck and operating it with maximum profit, the goal, how do you set up this business? How do you get started? And how do you maximize profit? When we talk about numbers on here, and I bring people on and we review their profit gauges, you're going to learn all about profit gauges, how to do your own accounting. It's really simple. Once you know how, we're going to teach all that. We're also going to spend time understanding how to read those business reports that I review. What's important? What should you be looking at? And this is the difference. I'm probably going to open my CMC with this, but I'm going to go a little more in depth. Here is the difference this kind of information makes. So a lot of times we go over Matt's numbers, and we talked about how the fact that Matt netted $270,000 this year. That's an incredible number. One truck, one driver, that is all profit. I also talked about the real outlier that I had, the guy that did over $400,000 net. Now, to how to do what Matt does. I can promise you I can teach you how to do what Matt does, and that's what this program is about. I can also promise you I can't teach you how the guy made $400,000+, because after looking at it, I have to believe it was a company that had a ton of COVID money. It was a medical equipment company, and this was during when all the COVID money was still flowing. And I believe that's the only way that ever occurred, because I've never seen anything like that. So I'm telling you right now, I can't teach you how to do that. That one was understanding how to run a good business and then getting really lucky. That is one time I would have to say luck played a part in that. But I can also tell you this. I don't know if he would have gotten that lucky had he not been running a good business. Then I'm going to teach you from there, if you decide to, and I'm going to help you with this decision, by the way, because most people screw up this decision. The decision after that is, do you want this one truck business that is really profitable, or do you want to take everything you've learned about running one truck really profitably and building a fleet? And I can tell you, there are people that I have taught how to run one truck really profitably. They've been doing that for years. And if they called me and said, I want to build a fleet, I'm going to go buy a truck, I would tell them, you're going to make a huge mistake. The skills you learn to run one truck profitably will transfer over to building a fleet, but it's not everything you need to know, not even close. In fact, it's not even the most important stuff you need to know. But I am going to teach you all of that as well. Everything I have learned about this industry and being really successful and profitable, everything I've learned in 40 years is going to be in this program. So some time on this, it was a pretty hard sell. I want this program full. I really do. So even though it's Destination Health, since we are closing registration for this event on Friday, if you have some questions about it today, I'll take them. We have 3 hours. We'll see if we use it all up or not. But I will take some questions about the CMC today if you have it. All right. I think I covered everything there I need to cover. I had some other ideas, but spent enough time on it. Get signed up so I don't have to talk about this anymore. Because really, once we fill this thing up, I have a whole year where I don't have to talk about it. I just get to go teach it, which I'd love to do. So join me. I'd love to see you in the program. I'd certainly love to meet you at Matt's Live. You will have the opportunity to join the year-long program even if you are not at Matt's. I don't think I said that yet. And that's an important point because a lot of people just can't make it to Matt's. I get that. Everything I cover at Matt's is being recorded, a video recording, which is also really, really expensive. Boy, did I get sticker shock. We've looked at this a couple times in the past, and we've wanted to do it in the past, and honestly, the cost kept us from doing it. This time, because of sponsors, we're able to do it. It's one of the reasons I benefit us all. It's a real win-win-win. You'd add three wins in there. We win because we're able to put on events like this with incredible value and allow people to get this information without spending a ton of money. You win because you get incredible value and you're going to learn a lot of information, and our sponsor wins. Our sponsors, we partner with companies who want to build relationships with you. And we are one of the best ways in the industry to do that. That's what companies seek us out for, is to build relationships with our tribe. And that's powerful. All right. We're going to get to health. And calls are coming in. They're pretty full. I am looking at this list. I could easily spend 15 minutes on this. I could probably spend a half hour on this. So I don't know how long I'm going to go. We'll see. But I will get to the calls today, I promise. So since I couldn't sleep last night, I started kind of digging back through all the health material. I've been working on all my trucking material for the CMC, and I kind of needed a break from it. And I thought, you know what, I'm gonna go back through all my health material. Maybe one day we'll build a CMC of health. I'm not sure. And I just wanted to review everything from the very beginning, when we first started talking about getting healthy. And we've told this story before. It was not my idea. It wasn't my idea at all. In fact, I fought this idea. I thought it was a really bad idea, and I thought we were actually putting our company at risk to go down this health path. And that's why I fought it so hard. But this is a time where I can say I was absolutely wrong. It was other people in the company that convinced me we really did need to do this. And I finally gave in. If any of you have dealt with Brittany, many of you will remember Kim. Kim, one of our employees, was the one that kept talking to me about this and pushing it. And Kim had an interesting story. She wasn't active her whole life. She wasn't involved in sports. And like just about every American today. By the time she was getting close to her 40s, she had gained weight and couldn't figure out how to lose it. She really got into running and triathlons. And while she was our employee, she actually completed the Lake Placid Ironman, which was pretty incredible. And Kim started Destination Health. And I always been interested in health and fitness for as long as I can remember. I've talked about it wrestling. I owned a gym. It was my second business was a gym. And then I got away from it when I was in trucking. And I was not doing the things I needed to do. And by the time I was, this was 50 when this first came up, 50, I was 50 years old. My health had deteriorated a lot. I was about 40 pounds overweight, and I had massive amounts of joint pain. In fact, I had an autoimmune condition, rheumatoid arthritis. And I just didn't feel good. It felt like every year my brain was working less and less. I had more brain fog. I couldn't focus on things. I could go on and on. My digestion was an absolute mess. Mine has been most of my life, had been. And I decided to do what I think I do best, what my kind of unique skill is, and that's the ability to dig in and research and learn a lot of information, even sometimes really complicated information, and then learn it in a way that I could teach it to other people so that they can understand the important parts without needing to understand all of the science and all of the research I did to get to that point. So while doing Destination Health for us, I went back to school, became a functional nutritional therapy practitioner. Glad I don't have to say that very often. An FNTP. And I started reading health books before I became an FNTP. That was my goal. I said, I am going to go read 100 of the top new books on health and fitness and weight loss and all those things. And I started reading books and I was just absolutely fascinated. In fact, I went back through some of those early books that I read and it was... You know, now it seems like, well, of course that's the way it is. We know this stuff. We talk about it. But back then I didn't. And the first time I heard or read that I should not be eating grains, because I was into health, I was eating whole grain everything. Remember, we weren't supposed to eat white stuff. You're not supposed to eat white bread. Eat whole grain bread. Don't eat white rice. Eat whole grain brown rice. And I took that to heart. I thought I was reading what I should be reading to know all that stuff. And I was shocked. How could that be? How could the government be telling us to eat 12 servings of grains a day? And this book is telling me they're toxic to humans and we shouldn't be eating them at all. Now that doesn't surprise us, but that was hard to get your head around back then. So one of the things I want to do right now is go back through the progression of where we started and where we are now. And the pattern of how we got here is clear. It is not about adding anything to our diet. It is not about eating some new superfood. It's not about acai berries or aroni berries or whatever the latest superfood that only comes from some jungle in South America. And everybody's out, you know, making money trying to convince us we should be eating this new superfood. It is completely the wrong approach. The right approach to getting healthy in today's modern world is to start eliminating foods from your diet. And I'm going to go through all the foods you need to eliminate from your diet if you want to be healthy. Not each individual food, but groups. You'll understand what I mean. And then we'll find out what's left. And a lot of you know where we're going with this. Some of you may not. What is left when we eliminate all the foods that we can absolutely prove there is a reason that human beings should not be eating those foods? What's going to be left? What is the optimal human diet? So the first food group I came across that we should get rid of, and I think a lot of people that were doing this back then, this is what we talked about all the time. And when I say we, I don't mean just me. I mean the people who were writing books, the doctors who were finally figuring out this out, the PhDs, the practitioners. Most of us came to this conclusion first, that you should not be eating grains of any kind. Wheat is the defender. But there are other grains, oats, quinoa, all the pseudo grains. The one exception we have found, and I have also come to the conclusion now that this food isn't necessary in our diet at all, we made an exception for white rice. And I still do today. I still eat white rice. I'm eating it less and less. But that was the one exception. And really the reason is white rice is nothing but, it's basically pure starch. And other than being high in carbs, which is a problem for the human body if you're not careful, just starch doesn't cause huge problems in our diet. But it can cause some, and if you eat too much of it, will actually cause many problems. So grains were the big one. And then we started looking at sugar. And that's another problem with grains. Many of them are also sugar. The starch part of grains really is sugar. It's just a complex sugar. But to your body, sugar is sugar. Doesn't matter what form it comes in. And that was the big one. You know, a lot of people figured out that our diet was so overloaded with sugar that that was a huge offender in our diet, no doubt. Also, for a lot of people, one of the hardest to quit. Sugar is addictive. There are studies that show it is similar to cocaine in the way it lights up neurons in our brain, in the way that we crave it. It is very similar, and for that reason, sugar is hard for a lot of people to quit. It wasn't one of the hard ones for me. My body does not handle sugar well. I've said many times that as an adult, I know this never bothered me as a kid because I remember not only was I eating really high sugar cereal as a kid, we put more sugar on it straight out of the sugar bowl. And then we had a glass of orange juice, which is a glass full of sugar. And it didn't bother me as a kid. I wish it would have. But as an adult, I could not eat something like that for breakfast. It would make me ill. I would have no energy the rest of the day. I couldn't think right. I was hungry all day. So I started moving away from sugar, especially in breakfast, a long, long time ago. And for me, like a lot of high sugar foods, I would eat dessert right after a big meal. Then that was kind of when I would crave a little sugar. Sugar wasn't hard for me to stop, and it's really not today either. We went from there to fruits. You shouldn't be eating fruits, but we kind of qualified it and said if you're still trying to lose weight or you're diabetic, you should avoid fruit completely. Once you get metabolically healthy, eating a little bit of fruit a day, not a big deal. I'll talk about that a little more too. We talked about getting rid of things like glyphosate in our food, you know, eating organic and trying to avoid glyphosate, which is becoming really, really difficult because even organic food today can test for glyphosate because our environment is so polluted with it, it is almost impossible to avoid. We talked about preservatives then. You know, preservatives that's not food, that's not good for us, shouldn't be in there. So stay away from processed foods, weird food additives that do all kinds of goofy stuff. Most of it is designed either to make the processing of the food cheaper, to make the food more shelf stable, to make the food taste better, to give the food a better mouthfeel. That's what most of these additives are used for. None of these additives are used to make the food healthier. None of them are, and none of them do. I've talked about the fact that they're the standard for whether you are allowed to put something in food. When I first read this, I was shocked. I assumed, I guess, that before you were allowed to put something, a chemical, some non-food stuff into food, that we had to do big studies. Like, well, first we'll do, you know, kind of lab studies where we just go look at what the chemical is and how it might react in our body. Then we would move on to animal studies. You know, let's test these things on, you know, animals, which is a horrible thing to do, by the way. That's what we did, and we justified it by saying, look, we need to make sure these things are healthy for humans or animals, that they're not dangerous before we try humans. I assumed all this was going on. This is how we test drugs and cosmetics and things like that. I thought we were doing this with food additives, and then you would have to move on to large-scale human trials. None of that happens. None of that is required to put some new chemical or substance into our food. Here's what's required. If a food scientist, or I don't even know what the qualifications have to be, maybe a nutritionist, looks at something somebody wants to stick in food. So if a company wants to stick something in food, they'll go out to the scientific community and say, we're thinking about putting this into a food product. Do you know if it would hurt anybody or not? Well, we haven't tested it. There's no real research on it. But if the scientific community says, we're not aware of any reason it would hurt anybody, that's all it takes. Then they are allowed to put that in our food supply. That's criminal. There's a term for it. You can go look this up if you want. GRAS, GRAS, I guess, is the way we pronounce it. It's an acronym. Generally recognized as safe. That's it. That is the standard for sticking some chemical in your food. It's generally recognized as safe. Nobody we asked could tell us it would hurt somebody. Well, maybe that's because we've never really tried to figure out if it would hurt somebody. But that's how they put stuff in our food now. And I don't know, there's like a trillion products on grocery store shelves these days. That might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but not much. Most of those products are not food. In fact, most of those products have the same three, maybe we could call them food ingredients. They are basically made up out of some sort of a grain, probably wheat, some sort of a seed oil, which I'm going to talk about. That's a big one we need to eliminate, way more important than I ever realized. And then sugar and a bunch of preservatives and chemicals. Take all those and put them together in different ways, and you come up with, you know, 870,000 non-food products that most people are eating. And that's what we buy in the grocery store. We used to talk about, you know, the trick to avoid that is only shop on the outside wall of the grocery store. Most stores are laid out where that is where some of the real food tends to be. And up and down all the aisles, you should just stay out of that whole area because there's no real food in there. So we went from that to the seed oils. I did eliminate seed oils pretty quickly. I didn't talk about it a whole lot because I didn't think it was all that important. But I think what happened was I eliminated them close to when I eliminated grains, and the benefits that I was getting, I probably thought it was all the grains. But I have certainly identified what happens now when I eat too much seed oils, but not all the other stuff. So I have never gone backwards on grains. I don't cheat on this. I never really never have. If I have consumed wheat in the last 10 years, it was because I didn't know it was in the food. Something maybe I ate at a restaurant or because I check labels too, and I know all the words they try to use to hide these things. I'm sure at some point I may have come across something I ate in a restaurant, didn't realize there was grains in there, like when I found out some breakfast restaurants put pancake batter in their omelets. Something like that would be the only time I have ever eaten wheat. I have never picked up a food that I knew had wheat in and eaten it in that whole time. The seed oils were so important, but now when I look back in the times that I traveled and I didn't cheat other than we ate out at restaurants a lot more, and all restaurants use seed oils. That may be changing now. This may be catching on. We may start to see restaurants now advertising that they are seed oil free. Now, let me be clear about what seed oils are. The government and the industry and the media want us to believe that they are vegetable oils. When you hear the word vegetable oil, think seed oil. Vegetables, the vegetable itself, we can't get oil out of the vegetable. Most vegetables are fat-free. Oil is fat. So I don't know why I never questioned this. How do you take corn? How do you take corn and get oil out of it? Or any vegetable? Whatever goofy vegetable, canola. What the hell is canola? It's rapeseed is the plant. Well, plants don't have a lot of fat. There are a few that do, but not many. Actually, it's fruits that have fats, which is kind of weird. But if you look at what we used to think, these are vegetables that have fats, avocados, olives, things like that. They're all fruits. They're not vegetables. So we don't get oil from vegetables. We get oil from vegetable seeds. That's why we call these seed oils. So virtually every bottle of cooking oil you see in the grocery store is some sort of a seed oil. A lot of them that are okay because they actually come from fruits, and then if they're processed right. But you could skip all that. The best oils or fats for human beings are all animal-based. And now I would venture to say I use animal-based fats about 98% of the time. I do use some avocado oil and things like that. Very little, just for certain things, like and it's usually for convenience. And I don't think those are a huge problem. But I wouldn't even want a lot of those in my diet. Olive oil is another one you can use. Primarily now, I try to cook and use all animal fats and any animal. Duck fat's one of my absolute favorites. Beef tallow, bison tallow, pork lard, chicken schmaltz. All the fats that come from animals, all the stuff they told us was going to clog our arteries, give us heart attacks, make our cholesterol go through the roof, kill us. It's all wrong. It's all wrong, and we should have known this. Human beings have been using animal fats since we've been on the planet. But we got that one completely wrong. One of the things made our health deteriorate so fast was when fast food restaurants switched from animal fats. McDonald's French fries were, I grew up with McDonald's French fries, and I got to tell you, they were really, really good. I shouldn't have been eating them, but at least when I was growing up, they were cooked in beef tallow. Every McDonald's cooked in beef tallow. There was a problem, though, because commercial fryers heat up the oil over and over and over and over, and that is damaging to fats, too. But not nearly as bad as seed oils. And all fast food restaurants, all restaurants across the board switched to seed oils. I think it happened around the early 90s. So we can see now the effects. Our health, the health of the standard American population gets worse every year. And the pace at which it is getting worse is increasing, which is really scary. We now have kids that are in their single digits, less than 10 years old, that are showing up with diseases that never used to show up till people were in their 40s or 50s. That is so scary to think about what our future looks like health-wise. Good news is you don't have to be a part of that ugly future. You have total control over this. After seed oils, I said we went after sugar, we went after preservatives, weird food additives. We warned people about not eating too much fruit. Here's the one that I think I'm going to have the hardest time convincing people of. I say that because I had the hardest time being convinced of this myself. But I am now fully convinced of this. Vegetables fall into this group too. We have been absolutely brainwashed into believing vegetables are the healthiest thing human beings can eat. Yeah, go ahead, eat a little meat, but boy, you better make sure you have a big salad. Salads are the most popular diet food, by the way. Well, clearly that didn't work because there's an awful lot of people eating salads that keep gaining weight. Salads were not the miracle diet weight loss food. They're also not health food, not in any way. Vegetables are not necessary in the human diet. Now, I still eat vegetables. I still plan on growing a very big garden, mostly because I love the gardening part of it. But there are some vegetables that I love, and I'm going to keep them in my diet. I grow a lot of tomatoes because I like sauces, barbecue sauces, hot sauces, spaghetti sauces, we would call them spaghetti sauces, things like that. There's plenty of other vegetables that I love, and I will grow them, and we will eat them, and I will enjoy them. But I also want people to understand I am only doing it because I want to, because I like those foods and I enjoy them. I am no longer fooling myself into thinking that those foods are making me healthier. They're not. And I have to be careful that you don't, we all have to be careful that you don't eat the wrong vegetables. They can be very unhealthy for us. This is a tough one to get across to people. This is going to take a long time for some people. The thing that's going to convince people of this, and it already is, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about it, and then we are going to get to the phone calls. I could talk about this for another hour or two easy, but the one thing that's going to help people understand this is when they're really sick and they haven't been successful losing weight, the most successful diet I have seen now, and not just from, you know, me doing it or helping other people do it, I follow, not exaggerating now, hundreds, maybe even thousands of people, doctors, PhDs, practitioners, nutritionists, just regular people who have learned this on their own. I follow at least 1,000 people now who are promoting the carnivore diet. And a lot of people will use it as kind of a first step emergency. You get great results from it. Most people believe that they're going to go back to eating a lot of vegetables. You really shouldn't. Be picky about vegetables and don't be under any kind of belief that they're somehow adding to your health. There is no nutrition in any vegetable that we can't get from an animal. And if there is something in there, then we probably really don't need it. But it's going to take a long time to convince people of this. Took me a long time, but I was going back over all the material. That's how I said I started this. And I started going back to some of the doctors that I was following early and watching their progression. And almost across the board, they have gone through the same progression that we have, ended up in this same place. And many of them got here kicking and screaming. They were big proponents of vegetables and not so much fruits, but vegetables. Most of the keto people said, yeah, watch your carbs, but eat, you know, all those low carb veggies. That's just not the case anymore. Many of those same people are now saying, what I'm saying today. Animal products are the optimal human diet. Vegetables are either emergency food or food we eat because we really enjoy it. We don't want to give it up, and we figured out what things are in there that we should try to avoid, or they're medicine. I do believe plants can be medicine. I believe that that is how humans evolved. We had shamans and witch doctors or whatever word we would use for the person in the tribe who learned this stuff about herbs and plants and figured out how to use plants to cure certain ailments. And actually, those people were more important many times than the leader of the tribe. And look at what happened to humans today. This is changing now, finally, and I hope it changes faster. I was raised, we kind of looked at doctors like God. Like, well, of course you have to listen to what your doctor says. Boy, we couldn't have been more wrong. I really feel sorry for the doctors. And the ones who have finally figured it out will tell you they feel horrible about what they did while they were doctors. Most of those have come around to this way of believing now. And it's funny to watch when I see a new doctor who is just exposed to this stuff about keto, or they are the same way. They will go all in on, yes, animal products are healthy for us. We get that now. But it takes them a long time, like it did many of us, to get to the point where we can honestly say vegetables are not healthy for us and they're not necessary in our diet. And here's some guidelines on how you should be eating them if you're going to eat them. One other thing I want to talk about is I have a lot of opinions about social media. I think I've said if I were the king of the world, I would wave my magic wand and social media would disappear. I don't believe it overall that it's good for most humans. But I think just like diets like carnivore and those things, I don't believe will ever be widespread. There are some good uses of social media. But we have to be very careful because social media, just like food, this is kind of interesting. It's the first time I've ever had this thought. Social media, just like food, has been designed to be addictive. They've taken something that could have been very powerful and beneficial, a way for human beings to connect more and stay connected, but they made it so that it is addictive and it is now replacing good human connection and relationships, just like our poisoned non-food supply has replaced real food. They made it so easy, so cheap, and so addictive that most people will end up being harmed by these things, not helped. It's kind of an interesting thought. Food and social media, I would have never thought that. But I also believe, though, that this revolution of people realizing that as hard as it is to get our head around, as much as we've been brainwashed about how healthy grains are and vegetable oils and fruits and vegetables, and as much as we've been brainwashed about that, we are now seeing it spread. I'd like to see it spread more, but without social media, I don't think it would have ever happened. It would have taken a much, much longer time. All right. I could go on, but I am going to get to some phone calls. I see I do have a question about the CMC, so I'm going to take that first, just because we'll get on to the food. But you can ask me anything about health today or specific questions about the CMC. We're going to go to Alabama. Bill, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin? Got a question.
Good.
I won't be able to make it to the truck show, but am I taking it that if I sign up for it, I can watch the first part online, correct? And everything
not
else.
Live, though. I do want to make
clear. Not live. Yeah.
Right. So you can sign up for the year-long CMC program right now.
Yeah.
We already have people signing up. And yes, we're doing is we are recording the entire event at Matt's,
uh-huh.
and then
uh-huh.
we will, The CMC Online is going to be delivered through our tribe's website as a course. And we will do webinars live, though. I will be teaching this live, but all of the material that you can go back over will be in the tribe's course, including every time we do a live webinar, which is every other week for a year. Those are recorded and put in the course as well. So you will always have access to every piece of this, the stuff we do live at Nats and the webinars every day. So you can go ahead and get signed up for it now if you want. And, yes, you will have access to all of this. I am even making the commitment, just because I've done things like this in the past, if something goes wrong on that recording, and it can, we're live. I can't stop because the film crew says, hey, we've had a technical problem. I'm not stopping. I have to keep doing this. This is live. I've made the commitment. If that happens, I will go back and re-record the whole thing to make sure you have access to it. I will just go in a room with a camera, and I will record all of the same material that would be there at Matt's.
All right. Well, I'm going to sign up. All right, I appreciate it, Kevin.
All right, looking forward to it. Thank you. All right, let's go to Minnesota. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Kevin. I just enjoying life, eating my pumpkin spice nut butter still.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah, I do. I truly do. I hope it stays in the store for quite a while yet.
It will, but let me address it because nut butters are plant food, right?
Details.
I know. But I'm going to explain why I continue to eat nut butter. I actually had some this morning. I opened the refrigerator. I saw some nut butter in there. I thought, boy, that looks good. And I had a spoonful. This is one of those plants that I'm going to make an exception for a couple reasons. I really like it. It's satisfying. And it is high in fat. And those are some good fats. Nuts are, I just did a whole thing on nuts last night. Like I said, I keep talking about this stuff, but I don't want to. Nuts and seeds are a unique food group. Now, there's some problems in there, too, so we don't want to overdo it. There are phytates and some other things we should be aware of. There are actually some ways to improve those things. When I was working on the kind of lightly sweetened walnuts using honey and things like that, we would soak the nuts for 24 hours and then dehydrate them to make them crunchy again. And that eliminates a lot of these issues like phytates and lectins, or maybe not eliminate, but really, really cuts it down. And when we partner, we try to find companies that are processing the nuts to make them a little less troublesome. But those are things that I will keep in my diet.
Well, I will, too. I plan on it. And just speaking of that, have you had any communication at all with the F-bomb people? Are they completely out of business? Are they no longer in business? Is that defunct? Or what's the status of the F-bomb? I really like their macadamia pecan ones, and they were so handy.
Yeah, I know. I will have to ask the team. They're always monitoring the show. And this is something I haven't even thought about or talked about for a long time. So I'm not sure. You know, it just...
Okay.
I'm sure people kind of freak out when, you know, it's a product that's in our store, it's our company, and I don't know how much it is. I don't know. Here's why. The way we do this as a company is... And this isn't even completely true anymore. In the beginning, I would go look for these kind of products myself. Find the right ingredients, make sure everything was processed right, their sourcing, do a lot of research, and then I would hand it over to the team. And sometimes I would reach out and build that initial relationship. That's really even changed. Lisa's really good at this now. In fact, Lisa and Brittany, as we're speaking, they are in the largest natural food show in the country down in L.A. right now, started today.
Right.
And they're there. And this is where we find those little companies that nobody knows about, and they've got great products. So that used to be my job here, and I really don't do that anymore. That it's mostly Lisa and Brittany doing that now. So that's why sometimes I don't know all the answers to those kind of questions. So hopefully somebody is listening that can help us with that one. And now that I thought about it, the two people most likely to know for sure would be Lisa or Brittany, and I don't think they're listening because they're at a trade show.
Oh, that's fine. No, that's fine. I just curious if you're talking about nut butters, got off the subject, but yeah, they do an awfully good job when you look at the selection you have in your store now. I just can't imagine how much better they could do. They just do such an awesome job already.
Yeah. So I do know that Lisa has been looking for another nut butter company. This is a great place to find those kind of things. That's why she's at this show.
Well, between the chocolate walnut, it tastes like brownie batter, and the pumpkin spice almond butter, and the cinnamon maple almond butter, what the hell more do you need?
Those nut butters, I believe all of the nut butters in our store, other than F-Bomb, we found at this same trade show last year. That's where we found Burroughs Family Farms. In fact, I think, Lisa was going to actually, Lisa had a meeting set up with Burroughs because they're in California and she could have made it on the way. But at the last minute, Lisa and Brittany decided to take the train down to L.A. instead of driving so they would have all the time on the train to work together.
Well, that didn't work out too good, but I guess I hope they made it all right anyway. I really do, so.
Oh, do you want to? I'm telling lots of
stories.
Yeah,
you said that yesterday on the train ride. They had several mishaps.
Three major incidents, and then a couple other goofy little minor incidents that I don't even want to talk about. I am shocked at what has happened to travel in our country. I am not looking forward to getting on a plane next week and doing it again in April. Every time I open the news, I see wheels are falling off airplanes, engines are flaming out,
doors
are flying off, and people getting half sucked out of planes, or we have the SWAT team coming on to take off an unruly passenger, or planes are turning around and going back to their destination because of unruly passengers. I am not looking forward to this. And now it turns out that it doesn't even sound like the train is what it used to be.
Isn't there a simple solution? I mean, don't you always look for the solutions? Why in the world doesn't Let's Truck have their own private jet by now? Seriously.
Well, here, you are onto something here. All I need
there you go.
All I need in order to be able to afford a private jet is for everybody to spend most of their food budget in our store. Like, you have to buy about 10 times more than what you're buying now. And if everybody listening to me does that, maybe I'll be able to buy an old cheap Citation.
There you go. Well, that's your answer. Just get a private jet and you're done with it. So.
There you go.
Oh, well, whatever. Anyway, that's not what I told about. We kind of digressed, but that's okay. It's fun, Kevin.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a statement, but I need to explain it, and then I want to ask a question.
Okay.
I do not like salmon. Now, having said that, I do not believe that I ever had real salmon. I believe any couple of times I've tried it and I don't like it, it's probably been that fake Atlantic salmon that's never been cooked right. So my question then is, if I were to acquire a piece of real Pacific wild-caught salmon, how would be the best way to prepare it that somebody that doesn't like salmon would probably like salmon? And I did talk to Chelsea about it a little bit, and she suggested I have salmon candy, but I don't want to spend that much time. I just want to go get a piece of salmon, and how do I cook a Pacific wild-caught piece of salmon to where I would like it?
Well, first off, good for Chelsea. And we haven't talked about this a lot, but Chelsea's our daughter. She's also an employee in the company.
Right.
And Chelsea is going through the FNTP program right now. So one of her projects, her and I made salmon candy together, so that was an excellent answer by her. I love salmon candy. Salmon candy is smoked salmon with a light coating of maple syrup on it while you're smoking it. It gives it a little bit of that maple sweetness, and then it's smoked, and it's pretty shelf-stable. I love salmon candy. We are really fortunate. I could almost walk out of my house and buy salmon candy almost any day of the year from Native Americans who are catching it right there in the Columbia River and then smoking it, making salmon candy themselves. I mean, it's that easy. It's right there in our town every day. But I do my own. I love doing it. So I do have an idea for you.
All right.
I've done this. I have helped a lot of people understand how good salmon can be because they've had it in a restaurant somewhere and they really didn't care for it. So first off, I do believe that wild-caught Pacific salmon has a better, milder flavor than most Atlantic salmon does. Atlantic salmon can tend to get that kind of fishy salmon taste. And most people don't like fishy. I mean, that's just not a good taste. And fish, by the way, shouldn't taste fishy. That tells you it's not fresh. And that's
right.
The case with Atlantic salmon. And here's something else I'm going to say about salmon. If somebody came to me and said, is salmon healthy or not? I would say salmon could be one of the most healthy foods you could eat. It could also be one of the worst foods you could eat. We now know that, well, really all Atlantic salmon you are going to find is farm-raised, and it is raised in horrendous conditions. Farm-raised Atlantic salmon is almost toxic. I would tell people, do not eat it. Just don't. If you're going to eat salmon, it needs to be Pacific wild-caught. And Pacific salmon so far cannot be farm-raised. It just doesn't work. Hopefully they never figure out a way to do it because that is the one food that we know is really nutritious and really healthy. Here's the best way I have found a couple ideas that make it a lot more palatable for people. First, grill it. That is, you pick up that grilled smoky flavor, and that really helps a lot. Get a little bit of a char on the outside of it. I actually like my salmon rare. I want it to be uncooked in the center and charred on the outside, kind of like a steak. I like salmon the same way I like steak. Char it on the outside to give me the flavor. Leave the inside as rare as you can. It's more nutritious that way, and I just enjoy it more. It doesn't get dried out. If you overcook salmon, it will get dry, and that's not good. So I want mine charred on the outside on a grill and rare to medium rare inside. Now, if the rare or medium rare freaks you out a little bit, cook it till it is cooked all the way through, but don't go 1 minute longer because it will start to get dry. Then the next thing, use like good heavy spice rubs. You know, if there is a spice rub that you really like, I don't care what you normally use it on, pork or beef or whatever, put it on salmon. A good spice rub, a nice strong spice rub can kind of help overcome some of those flavors you might not like. Or, this is a little harder unless you cook a lot, I love sauces. I make all kinds of sauces. Hollandaise sauce, a good sauce on top of a salmon can help kind of, you know, blend some of those flavors and cover up some of the taste you might not like. A good example of this is Lisa. Lisa does not like salmon. There's a lot of seafood she will eat, but she was never really wild about salmon. And if she eats it, it's because I've cooked it the way I just described. It's fresh Pacific salmon. I've usually charred it on a grill. I've used either a spice rub or a sauce or something like that. And it goes from a food she would rather not eat to a food she really, really likes.
Huh. All right. Well, that's one way. I've got it's a local company that makes a pork rub, but I guess it could work on salmon also. Yeah.
Yep. Use it.
All right.
I actually,
so what's another method
make,
if I don't want to fire up the grill?
Pan sear it. So here's what I would do if I just didn't feel like going out to the grill, but I wanted salmon. I would turn my oven on probably about 180 degrees, about as low as most ovens will go. And I would preheat it to that temperature. I would take a cast iron pan. If you don't have a cast iron, use any pan, but cast iron works best.
Right.
I would get it screaming hot. And I would throw the salmon in. Make sure you use plenty of fat in there, too. Clarified butter is good because it won't burn. Avocado oil is good for this. Beef tallow would work. I would get it to the point that the oil is actually starting to smoke. So you kind of watch when you put the fan in. Watch for those first little bits of smoke. Throw that in skin side down. Crisp up that skin. Flip it over. Sear the flesh side. And then immediately take that cast iron pan and stick it in that 180-degree oven until it is done the way you like it.
Okay. Well, I just
and would, I will
if
also
I could find
say,
a piece of Pacific salmon.
Yeah, I don't want you to try this, certainly not the first time, but I eat the skin.
Okay.
I get it nice and crispy, and I eat the skin as long as I can try to hide it from Diesel. Because if Diesel knows there is crispy salmon skin, he will chase me down.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious. I just would like to really try it sometime on a real piece of salmon from the Pacific. I've always compared it to, I have never in my life liked white meat chicken. And I always compare the texture and of the salmon and tuna also to white meat chicken, which I don't like.
Got
I always
it.
Eat the I'll, dark I, meat. And I've always liked the oilier fishes, but, you know, the Mississippi River catfish is always one of my favorite.
You just described me to a T. Everything you just said, I completely agree with. I don't like white meat chicken or turkey. I really prefer the fatty, dark meat. I don't like the texture of salmon or tuna that has been overcooked. That's why I like it rare. It doesn't get that texture. And I eat tuna the same way. I throw two big two-inch thick tuna steak, gets cooked about 30 seconds on each side, and that's how I eat it. It is basically sushi inside.
Just doesn't appeal to me at all, Kevin. I'm sorry.
I know, but I will tell you, because it's a texture thing, if you can get past the fact that it's raw, the texture is so much better. In fact, it goes from a texture I hate to a texture I love. Sushi, to me, has just an incredible mouthfeel and texture.
Okay. Just hard to get my mind wrapped around it. I'm open-minded, and I would try it, but it's just awful hard for me to get my mind wrapped around it. That's the problem.
Yeah, no, I if you can get past the idea that, you know, raw fish is somehow something we should never eat, if you can get past that, I promise you, based on what you just described, that is exactly how I feel about all these things, and that's why I eat tuna and salmon, either rare as sushi. Those are about the only two sushis I eat, and I don't do rice. I basically do sashimi.
Okay.
Which is just the fish.
Well,
and I want it raw, and it's tuna and salmon.
Is the labeling fairly reliable? In other words, if I found a fish market and it was labeled Pacific wild-caught salmon, it's fairly certain that it would be, right?
Pretty good odds. I would probably say somebody out there has mislabeled it once in a while, but I'll give you a couple other clues. Seafood in our food supply is a real problem. Not necessarily salmon, because there are quick ways to tell the difference. But I can promise you, if you've ever eaten seafood in a restaurant and it was labeled grouper, it might not be grouper.
Right.
The restaurants themselves don't know it's happening. It's the distributors. Many, many pieces of whitefish, just looking at them, I don't care how good you are, it's hard to distinguish one from another. And our food supply, this has been shown over and over and over. Many times we are in restaurants, even in grocery stores, we might not be eating the fish they told us we were eating. Now, it doesn't happen as often in salmon because there are, I can promise you, you could never fool me. It's not that hard. Pacific wild, or Yeah, Pacific wild-caught salmon is more likely to have a darker red kind of tint to the flesh, where Pacific salmon is where we get the color salmon. You know, you go to buy paint for your walls or whatever, and you see the color salmon. That's the color of Atlantic farm-raised salmon. And you know what?
Okay.
It's artificial.
Probably
if
put
you
stuff
actually,
in the food to make it colored, probably.
If you actually could get the one place in the world that wild Atlantic salmon is a thing is like Scotland. So there are times where I will buy smoked salmon or gravlax that is actually Atlantic salmon, and I like it better. Atlantic salmon is fattier, but you have to work hard to make sure it is truly wild caught. It's probably going to come from someplace like Scotland, and it will have that salmon color. But the Atlantic salmon we buy, if they didn't put an additive in their feed, it would be this horrible gray color. Nobody would ever eat it. It looks disgusting.
Okay. Well, that helps enlighten me. I just want to broaden my horizon. I want to so bad want to try it and like it, but that's given me a couple of ideas on how to try it and like it, maybe.
Have you ever tried smoked salmon?
I don't believe so. I just
you might
stay away from
try
salmon.
That.
I just know I don't like it, and I just stay away from it. So.
Yeah, you might want to just try smoked salmon from the store, but just make sure it is Pacific. And it will be labeled correctly, and you can still see, you know, if you understand, you can look at the coloring and know which one it was. Or if you look hard enough, you can find a lot of smoked salmon from places like Scotland that is true ocean-going, wild-caught Atlantic salmon. And, again, that is still my favorite. It's just so hard to find,
well,
and it's pretty damn expensive.
Well, why isn't it in your store?
That's a good question. Maybe we should. Oh, no, I know
another
why.
Project.
No, I know why. Because most smoked salmon is not shelf-stable. Still got to be refrigerated.
Oh, okay. All right.
I shouldn't say that. There are some out there that are shelf-stable. You know what? You just gave me an idea. In fact, I'm going to send Lisa a message to keep an eye out for some. Maybe there's some at this show.
Well, there you go. I give you another project, and
wait a minute. I must have just had a brain cramp. We do have shelf-stable seafood in our store.
All right, but not the smoked salmon, right?
Oh, you're right. Not wild Atlantic
smoked
salmon, which is one of my favorites.
I've got
so you're right. It should be in our store.
Sardines and stuff. Yeah, I've got mussels and sardines and stuff before, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Well, that answered the question, Kevin. I so much appreciate the time and let you get on to bigger and better things.
You're welcome. I don't know if we'll find anything any bigger and better than that, though. Let's go to Ohio. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is actually his wife, Angie.
Okay. Hi, Angie. Good morning.
Hi. Chris talked to you a while ago. I have Berger's disease, and you know it's an autoimmune disease. My doctor says low protein, so he's got me on 55 grams or less a day.
Bad idea.
The last time I was there, I said to him, my husband, my sister think I don't eat enough protein. And he said, you can eat less protein, and that way you don't have to get a kidney transplant. That's what he told me.
Okay. And
so how
he's wrong.
Okay.
Protein is not bad for our kidneys. Now, if our kidneys become too diseased, then there might be some truth. I'm not totally convinced of this yet, but there might be some truth that maybe we could make them last a little longer if we went lower protein. The problem is you're going to create many other problems in your body from a lack of protein. You know, when we say to be optimally healthy, you should be eating X amount of protein, and our numbers are all wrong, by the way. It should be much higher than what they tell us. So if we were to say, look, for your weight and you should be eating 75 grams a day, not 55, I would probably say you should probably try to get closer to 100. If you cut it down to what they're recommending, you are going to create other health issues. And honestly, I will tell you, the reason we have all of these autoimmune conditions to begin with are because we moved away from protein-heavy animal products. So why would we take what caused the problem and think it's somehow going to make the problem better?
I don't know, but a nurse explained to me that your kidneys filter your blood. She said the more protein you eat, because of what I have, it plugs up my kidneys. She said when I eat protein, my kidneys get plugged up.
Don't doctors and nurses tell us we should be eating whole grains and lots of vegetable oils and meat is going to give us heart attacks and cholesterol is bad for us and we should be eating a lot less salt? Don't they also tell us those things?
Well, that's true. They do.
They're completely wrong. In fact, I can't think of any industry that has been more wrong about everything and is killing us because of it. I no longer trust anything they tell us because almost everything they tell us is just wrong.
But can you see why I'm skeptical of what you're saying?
Yes.
Because
absolutely.
I read online about what I have, they're like, it says you need to eat low protein. So it's not just a doctor telling me, it's when you look it up. That's what it says.
Well, but where did that information come from online? When you read that, have you attempted to track that information back to its source?
No, I have not.
I will tell you where it comes from. It primarily comes from studies that were paid for by Big Pharma, almost exclusively. Let me see if I can find this quote real quick. I had a quote that I was actually going to talk about this morning. I want you to hear this. I'm actually going to go look it up. So give me just a couple seconds here because I don't multitask well. I have a hard time typing and talking at the same time. Quote from New England Journal. This quote is going to come from the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. That is the gold standard around the world when it comes to medical research. If you do a study, if doctors do a study, if PhDs do a study, the gold standard is to get that study peer-reviewed and published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Are we good so far?
Yep.
About health studies. Let me see if I can find this. Boy, I'm finding all kinds of other quotes that are similar. I'm not finding the original one that I've always talked about. All right, I'm just going to summarize it for you. The editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, the premier medical magazine in the entire world, said clearly, you can go look this up, you'll find it, we can no longer, I'm paraphrasing now, we can no longer trust any medical study, even the studies we publish in the New England Journal of Medicine. Basically, what she goes on to explain is that they are all bought and paid for by special interest groups, by Big Pharma, by food companies, and if you have enough money, you can afford to run a study that will come up with any conclusion you want it to come up with. And that's where doctors and nurses get their information, from these studies. And they've been bought and paid for, and they are corrupt, completely corrupt. You can now pay for any study and have the conclusion say anything you want it to say, and then you can send that study out to the mainstream media, and they will publish it, and they will tell people anything you want to tell them.
Well, that's scary.
I want you to go look up so you know that is true. And how can that be allowed? She said this, don't quote me on the time, but I think it was over a decade ago. This is not new. When she made that statement, why didn't everybody say, prove it, And if this is true, our entire system needs to be revamped. Now, it never made it to the mainstream media. And you know why? Do you watch much TV? Do you watch any TV at all?
I don't watch any news. I can tell you that.
No, you don't have to watch news. Daytime TV is really bad for this.
I don't watch daytime TV. I'm at work.
Okay. Do you know who the single biggest advertiser on TV is? Actually, one of the single biggest advertisers in the world.
No.
Big Pharma. How many drug commercials do you see in a day?
You know, you're right. There's a lot of drug commercials on TV.
They spend more money on... Do you know this? Here's a fact that should scare the hell out of us. There are only two countries in the entire world that allow that to happen. In every other country in the world except the United States and New Zealand, it is illegal to advertise prescription medications anywhere. Can't do it in magazines, can't do it in newspapers, can't do it on TV, can't do it on billboards. No advertising of prescription drugs is allowed. Only two countries in the world allow it. And look at the health of those two countries. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Because they spend so much money on advertising, they control what gets said in the media.
So if I join your health, your health tribe or whatever that monthly thing is,
right,
can I get
coaching.
Somebody to help me with a diet?
Absolutely. You know what? If you will trust me and just try something, I know you're going to freak out when I say this, but we don't spend a lot of time in group coaching helping people with diets because that's too easy. Nobody has to pay me for that. Your diet should be primarily animal products. And animal products are high in protein, so I know that's going to freak you out. But that the human body needs incredible amounts of protein to be healthy. And what we do by eating only animal products, we eliminate the foods that are causing your problem. What did anybody explain to you what is wrong with your kidneys? Down to the most basic level?
Well, they let too much protein through. Like,
no,
so my urine
no, they
is
did.
Always
that's,
high in protein.
That's completely
that's
wrong.
What
no,
they tell me.
The fact that it's high in protein is right because your kidney function has been compromised. But did they explain what's compromised?
They may have. I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Right now.
If they ever said this word, did anybody ever use the word inflammation?
I don't think they ever did.
Nope, they don't. Almost all of our diseases are really just based in inflammation. When we have rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune condition, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis in my 20s. And at 60, I have zero signs of rheumatoid arthritis. No doctor, no matter how many tests they do, would ever be able to know that I did have it at one time. There's no indicators left whatsoever. Inflammation
wow.
is the root of almost every single disease state we have. Your kidneys right now are inflamed. And when organs or tissues are inflamed, they can't function properly. And that's where the problem starts. That is the root of the problem. Now, why are they inflamed? Our entire bodies are inflamed because of our horrible diets. The only food group that is truly non-inflammatory in the human body are animal products. Let me give you another statistic that we should pay attention to. 99% of all of the animal species that exist on this planet, if you traveled all over the world and you found every living creature, 99% of them are edible to human beings. If we look at all the plants that exist in the world, only 1% of them are edible for human beings.
Wow.
The only way for us to truly eliminate all inflammation in our body is to eliminate plant foods from our body. It was also plant foods, primarily wheat and gluten, that caused your autoimmune condition to start. Same for me. I had rheumatoid arthritis in my 20s because of all the plant foods I ate, primarily wheat.
Yeah, I love wheat.
I know, we all do. Let's think about this. People are shocked when I say, if you could quit all wheat products for just 7 days, and you could try this if you want. Don't take any, I'm going to give you another thing to try, but if you don't want to go that far to just eating animal products for 7 days, and do you hear this time frame? 7 days.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to do something for 6 months to see results. You are going to see it in 7 days. I've had people call me back and say, I saw the results in 48 hours. Here's why. Think back over your life. Once you were beyond an infant eating baby food or nursing, however you grew up, can you think of a day in your life that you probably didn't eat wheat or a grain?
No.
No. We all eat it every single day. So how could we know how we would feel if we don't eat them? We don't know what it feels like because we've never done it in our entire life, unless maybe we were so sick that we didn't eat for 2 or 3 days. But that's probably the only exception. Other than that, we all eat wheat every day. So it's the norm. We think this is how we're supposed to feel. I will tell you how we're supposed to feel. This is not a lie or an exaggeration. I feel physically better at 60, almost 61 years old than I did at 20. I had horrible digestion at 20. That's gone. I don't even know I have a digestive system anymore. I don't feel anything. Everything just works the way it's supposed to. Don't have joint pain anymore. It was a constant for me when I was in my 20s. I had fatigue and brain fog. That's all gone. And I have seen people feel this in 7 days or less. So I would offer you two things to try. Cut out all wheat, and you got to be careful because they hide it in just about every product you can find in the grocery store. So you have to stick to foods that don't have ingredient lists. That's one of the easier ways to do it. But just try to eliminate wheat or grains for 7 days and call me back, not next Wednesday because I'll be doing the CMC, the Wednesday after, or call me any other day that I'm doing a free-for-all and we'll talk about it. I promise you, you're going to see results.
Okay, I can do that.
Like I said, 10 years of this, and my open today was I started by eliminating grains, and it was life-changing. Then I eliminated seed oils and cut down on sugar, and I am now to the point that I can say if I eat... And I've only done this for really short periods of time, but if I eat nothing but animal products, I feel even better than I do right now. But I do choose to eat some plant foods purely for enjoyment, and I'm very picky about them. I try to make sure I understand how many lectins, phytates, oxalates, let me go back and explain that. This is another reason why we should not be eating plant foods. Animals, well, first off, let's start with all living organisms do not want to die, correct? There's a huge drive in everything to stay alive and reproduce. Animals have defenses. If we try to kill animals, some of them could kill us back, right?
Sure.
All of them can at least try to run away from us, right?
Yeah.
They have defenses. What about these poor plants? They're just stuck there. They can't fight back. They can't run away. They don't want to die either. They don't want to be eaten. So what they've developed are chemical defenses. Now, those chemical defenses aren't strong enough to kill us, but they do kill a lot of other predators, a lot of insects or animals. If they eat certain plants, they will die because that plant has chemical defenses. It doesn't want to be eaten. Now, they're not powerful enough to kill us. But we realize now that things like phytates, lectins, oxalates, we can measure all of those things in plant foods. Those are their chemical defenses. They're not strong enough to kill us, but they're strong enough to make us sick over time. Is it starting to make a little sense?
Yes, it is.
But the problem here is,
how
old are you, by the way? And I do ask women that all the time.
54.
Okay. You have had about the same indoctrination I have had. We have been told over and over and over, weight loss is about calories in, calories out. Total bullshit. We can prove that's not how the human body works at all. We've been told you need to eat low fat because fat is bad for us and it will make you fat and it will clog your arteries and it will kill you eventually with a heart attack. Totally wrong. We've been told to eat low salt. Stupidest idea ever. You can't consume too much salt. Your body won't let you. But when we push that salt to the limit where our body starts saying, hey, that might be a little too much, it's a lot of salt. But that's how we should be eating. That's how human beings evolved. Here's another way I could tell you that plants are not natural human food and animals are. I make this challenge all the time to vegans, and not a single vegan has ever taken me up on this. Have you ever spent much time in the woods?
Not a lot, no.
Okay. The times you have been out there, have you ever just looked down on the ground and said, oh, look, a head of broccoli?
No.
I know we laugh about that. I do, too. But why not? Why don't we ever find...
Because it's not natural, right?
That's correct.
Broccoli doesn't... Yeah. I just heard that not long ago.
Yeah. So most of the vegetables you find in the grocery store, I challenge you to go out in the wild somewhere and find them. There are a few. Wild carrots are pretty plentiful where I live. I mean, they'll pop up right in my lawn. I'll tell you this. When I see a wild carrot, and they're easy to identify, the greens look just like the greens you see on a carrot in the grocery store, except the greens are like an entire bush. They're huge. And then you pull the carrot out of the ground, and it looks like a little pencil. And it is so bitter, you would never eat it. That's what a natural wild carrot is. They're not big, giant flesh carrots with a little bit of greens on top and somewhat sweet when you cook them. We created that. We created almost all of the vegetables we eat today. So here's my challenge to vegans. And I wish someday somebody would take me up on this. I'd love to do it. I challenge vegans, the two of us, whoever the vegan is, we are going to go out and live in the wild. We're not going to be allowed to take any food. We have to find all the food we're going to eat. We're just going to do this for 5 days. And my statement is, by about the third day, maybe the second, you, the vegan, are going to be so hungry, you will be ready to rip the head off of a bunny and eat it live.
Yeah, they're going to be starving.
Starving. Human beings cannot survive in the real world, not this artificial world we've created with vending machines and grocery stores and restaurants and convenience stores everywhere. We have access to food everywhere now. Even the poorest people on our planet aren't starving to death. That's pretty rare these days. In fact, the less money you make in this country, the more likely you are to be obese. How does that make sense?
Because the cheaper food is bad for you.
The worst food we have, right? Real food that we can access in the wild is all animal. It's not plants. I challenge you to go out in the woods and try to find something, anything to eat. I've done it. There's almost nothing I could find that I could eat. Tell us something.
Yeah.
the brainwashing has been so powerful for our whole life, you and I. It's been so powerful that it is so hard to overcome this. The only way I was able to overcome it myself was to keep seeing these results over and over and over. I eliminated grains. I got healthier immediately. Eliminated seed oils. Felt better. Cut way back on how much sugar I consumed. Felt even better. Started to add more and more animal products to my diet and got even healthier. I believe it because I have seen the proof now thousands of times. There's a woman I follow on X that I can't even imagine what her life must have been like. She was anorexic. She had 6 diagnosed mental conditions. She had 3 autoimmune diseases. I don't even know how this woman was still alive. She developed all of these things as a vegan with anorexia. She switched to pure carnivore, and the woman at 50, I think she's 54 or 55, she is an absolute picture of health now. Just stunning, the transformation, and she tweets about it nonstop. She has none of those mental conditions. All 3 autoimmune conditions are gone. She takes no prescription drugs, and she is just happy and loving life. And that's just one example. Like I said in my open, I follow over 1,000 people now that promote the carnivore diet. Many of them are not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They didn't study nutrition. They were so sick, they were willing to try anything. And they tried carnivore, and it worked, and nobody ever goes back. I can find 1,000 vegans who are now carnivores. I can't find a single carnivore who ever goes back.
Here's a question for you. How do I know that I'm not the exception and that eating the carnivore diet is going to make my kidneys worse?
Boy, I'm going to say something. Don't be too offended by this. But when you make that statement, all I can think of is, my God, do you have a big ego? You somehow think you're different than every other human being on the planet?
I don't have a big ego.
I know. That's why I said, I'm going to say this, but that's how it comes across to me, because I understand all of us are exactly the same. There are no exceptions. I shouldn't say that. Our diet has been bad enough for long enough now that we truly have started to change human genetics, and that is really, really scary. So there are some people out there that are so screwed up genetically, but that's pretty rare. All this talk of, well, I got diabetes because my mom and dad had it. That's total bullshit. And people will point to statistics and no, look, diabetes runs in families. You're right, it does. Go back and check those same families, and if they have a family pet, their pet's likely to have diabetes too. I certainly hope that's not genetic.
Right.
It's not. It's because their pets eat the same way they eat. It runs in families, not because of genetics. We can absolutely prove that. It runs in families because families tend to eat the same stuff.
Right. You're going to eat the way your parents ate.
Absolutely. So all of these diseases that we keep saying are, well, I know it's genetic. My parents had it. I know your parents had it, but it's not genetic. It's because you ate the same thing they ate. I have challenged doctors that still believe this. Doctor, if you believe that, please show me the gene that has been identified to cause diabetes, because it doesn't exist. If you think it's genetic, prove it to me. Show me the gene. We've mapped the entire human genome, so tell me which gene this person has and this one doesn't that is going to cause diabetes. You can't, because it doesn't exist.
You have like a whole different way of thinking.
Oh, boy, do I ever. And it's scary. It scares me. How could my whole life have been wrong about this?
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like all
I know.
These people
I know what I know what you're going through, and I will also tell you this: of all the work I do to help people get healthier, what I am doing right now is by far the most difficult. I've done all the research at thousands and thousands of hours of research. That's hard. It's not nearly as hard as trying to overcome the brainwashing you and I have been through our whole life.
Yeah.
How could our medical system be this corrupt and wrong? But it is. I don't blame the doctors. I don't believe doctors go to medical school so that they can kill people. But it's how the system has been designed by big pharmaceutical. Do you realize that most medical schools, the entire curriculum is designed by big pharma?
I didn't know that.
That you can go look that up too. The information's out there. Really, don't make this stuff up. Do you know that there are medical schools that have 0 hours of nutritional education? Zero. I don't even want to use the word the best medical schools because there are none. But there are a couple medical schools that maybe have 10 or 15 hours of nutritional data. The worst person in the world is to ask nutritional advice is from your doctor because they don't know. They weren't taught nutrition. Why do we think that doctors know how we should eat when they were never taught themselves?
Right.
Doctors are taught how to diagnose a disease with a name and then know which drug they are supposed to prescribe to you. That is their entire medical education. Diagnose a disease with a name and prescribe a drug.
We think about doctors like gods, and we do, because
we
think they know everything.
That's right. We've been brainwashed to believe that. That was the plan.
Yep.
I have an open challenge to any doctor anywhere. Come on this show, and we will debate this. I will debate any doctor anywhere, any PhD researcher. If they believe I'm wrong, I have an open challenge. I tell people, tell your doctor to call me. I'll talk to him. I'll debate him here on the air.
You know, when
I will tell you, I have debated doctors before, and I will tell you after about 15 minutes of this what they start defaulting to. You know what one of their questions will be?
What's that?
So tell me again, Kevin, what medical school did you go to?
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. They're going to want to know if you're a doctor.
Correct. And they know I'm not because I tell them up front, I'm an ex-truck driver.
Right.
That's how horribly corrupt this system is, that as an ex-truck driver, I make people than 99% of the doctors in this country. There are no not none, but there are very, very few doctors that actually make people healthier.
Okay, can you tell me what you eat? Like, what do you eat for breakfast? Like, what your day consists of, what you eat? So I can get an idea. Like, can you eat eggs?
Since you asked that question specifically, I'm going to tell you what I do specifically. I believe that another really healthy human practice, because this is how we evolved, I believe in fasting. And the easiest form of fasting I have found is what's called intermittent fasting. Look, I don't like to be hungry. And I can promise you, in the last 10 years, when I'm hungry, I eat. I never look at food and think, oh, boy, if I eat again, maybe I'm going to gain weight. Because I don't. I eat anytime I'm hungry, and I eat as much as I want until I am no longer hungry. But I do realize that there are lots of benefits to fasting. But I don't want to be hungry. So when you eat this way, you will find your hunger changes completely. I can easily go a day without eating. It doesn't bother me a bit. But what I have found is what's called intermittent fasting. So what I try to do, and I'm pretty good at it most of the time. I'm not as strict as I used to be, and I should probably get back to being stricter. I restrict all of my food to a six-hour window. I try to only eat between noon and 6 p.m. That means I am fasting for 18 hours every day. Most of that fasting time is overnight, so it's really easy. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm not hungry. I have a cup of what we used to call bulletproof coffee. We call it NDK coffee. In my I'm drinking it right now. In a 12-ounce cup of coffee, I have 2 tablespoons of butter and 2 tablespoons of coconut oil. Pure fat. And that will take care of my appetite till about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I'll eat until about 6, and then I try to stop. And it's easy. I'm not hungry. And during that six-hour window, as long as I'm eating the foods I know I should be eating, mostly animal products, I eat as much of it as I want. Yes, I do eat a lot of eggs. I eat a lot of beef. I eat pork. I eat chicken. I eat turkey. I eat duck. I eat almost anything I can find. Bison, antelope. I have eaten camel. I've eaten all kinds of weird animals. Rattlesnake. I could go alligator. I could go on and on. If it's an animal, I'll eat it. And when I eat meat, I try to default to the fattiest cuts of meat I can find. They're more satisfying. They give me incredible amounts of energy. They taste good. They're the cheaper cuts. They're the easier cuts to cook. Good fatty cuts, you can just throw in a slow cooker and walk away from it and come back 4 or 6 hours later, and I've got an awesome meal. So I pressure can meat so that it's shelf stable for years and years. And last night for dinner, I opened up a can of smoked pulled pork that I smoked and then canned. And I actually canned this particular jar back in 19. So it's like 5 years since I canned it. I have a whole pantry full of canned meat. I took a glass mason jar of smoked pulled pork, set it on my wood stove because that's how I heat out here at the homestead, and 15 minutes later, I walked over with the fork and ate it. Bacon, sausage, baby back ribs are one of my absolute favorite foods. Honestly, wouldn't you agree that most people that aren't afraid of eating meat, people that aren't vegetarian and vegan, but still eat basically the standard American diet, aren't all the foods that they get really excited about are kind of those special foods? Aren't they all animal products? Does anybody get really excited about eating broccoli?
No.
And when we do eat it, the way I eat broccoli when I do eat it is with about a half a pound of butter, some shredded Parmesan cheese, and a ton of salt and pepper. So is it the broccoli I'm after or the butter, the salt, and the pepper, and the cheese?
Right, because broccoli by itself is not that great.
It's awful. It's absolutely awful. Almost all vegetables are. Kids are smarter than we are. What do we always say? We got to get our kids to eat our vegetables. They're vegetables. No, they're smarter than we are. They realize that stuff's awful. They don't want to eat it. We have to force them.
Right.
The joke in our house, our daughter Chelsea, I just talked about her. She's going through the same education I went through. When there were peas, she had to eat 5 of them. 5 peas, and it took her like 10 minutes. She had to swallow them like pills. God, we should have gotten a clue about this over the years, right?
Right.
Do we get excited about a ribeye at a steakhouse?
Sure.
Or not everybody, but lobster. Isn't that way up high on the list as a special food for a lot of people?
Yeah, a lot of people, not me, but yeah.
Right. Lisa and I, just the other night, the only thing we ate for dinner was Dungeness crab. That's it. No sides, no nothing. Dungeness crab with a ton of butter, because crab is low fat. And even though I love the taste and the texture of crab, if I try to eat it, I feel like I'm missing the fat. I can tell. And the minute I add some fat to it, then it becomes luscious. And that's the kind of stuff I crave. Baby back ribs. Come on. Who doesn't love baby back ribs?
Right, but you make your own sauces, right? I need sauce with mine.
I do, too. I love barbecue sauce. But I can tell you how to make a really quick, somewhat, I won't call it a healthy barbecue sauce, but I'll call it neutral. Nothing in it there that's going to hurt you. It's really simple, too. The first thing you have to do, and it's not that hard, go online and find a ketchup with no sugar. Because everything you're going to find in the grocery store, unless you go to a Whole Foods, you could probably find one there. Make sure you read the label. No sweeteners of any kind. A ketchup with no sweeteners of any kind. The first ingredient should be tomatoes. That's the base of your sauce. Now, all you have to add to that to make a really good barbecue sauce is apple cider vinegar, blackstrap molasses, and a little bit of liquid smoke. And I don't measure anything. So when people ask me, well, how much of each one? Hell, I don't know. I just take a bowl and pour those things in and taste it. If I feel like I need a little more acid, I put in a little more vinegar. If I feel like it might need a touch of sweetness, I don't like much sweetness in mine, put in a little more blackstrap molasses. If I want a little more smoke, I'll put in a little more smoke. That will be the best barbecue sauce you've ever tasted. Once you get your ratios the way you, and that's the beauty of doing this, you get to make it exactly the way you want it.
Sure.
I like more apple cider vinegar. Lisa really doesn't do a lot of barbecue sauce, but if she did, hers would lean towards a little more ketchup and a little more molasses, the acid in mine.
Okay, here's a question for you. What about stevia? It's supposed to be a natural sweetener. Is that something that you would eat?
It is, and I've recommended it, but here's how I recommend it. I actually grow stevia in my garden. It is super easy to grow. It's a weed. Throw a couple stevia seeds in the dirt, and you're going to have a huge stevia plant. The hardest thing is trying to cut it back so it doesn't take over. That's how easy it is to grow. I recommend stevia as a transition because one of the problems is, let's go back to nature again. If we're out in the woods, where are you going to find something sweet?
You're not, unless you might find a berry.
Right, and are wild natural berries really that sweet?
No.
No, they're not. They're pretty low in sugar, and they're not that sweet. Berries are one of the plant foods that I absolutely still eat and grow. I am looking at my garden out here at the homestead. I have probably 40 strawberry plants and probably 30 blueberry plants, and I can pick wild blackberries anywhere around here. They grow like weeds around here. So berries are a part of my diet. I like berries. And again, hunter-gatherers would have eaten berries. Absolutely. The berries we can grow today and the berries in the wild today are the same berries our hunter-gatherer ancestors ate. But let's think about something. When would they eat them? When do berries tend to ripen in most parts of the world? Late summer, early fall, right?
Yeah.
And humans would actually gorge on them when they were in season. And do you know why they did?
Just to store up?
Yep.
Yeah.
If we ate too many berries, we would start gaining weight because of the sugar. And that's the purpose. Just like bears will consume tons of berries, gain 100 pounds because they have to, because they're going to go into hibernation and not eat at all. Human beings, animals become much more scarce in the wintertime, and it's harder to hunt. So we fatten up in the fall with berries to help us survive the winter. Doesn't that make sense too?
Yeah.
When you really start to think about the information we have had access to, it all starts to make sense. The problem is we've been brainwashed.
I agree. Okay, thank you for your time. I got to get back to work, but I'm going to try the no wheat and try to eat animal products.
And at any time when I'm on the air, please call me, and we'll continue talking
okay.
about this. And if you decide this is working for you, I'd love to see you in the coaching program. And I will tell you this call right now, I don't remember when I picked it up, but it's definitely one of the longer calls I take. I can't do a long call like this all that often. That's what the coaching program is for. I spend as much time with everybody in that program as they need.
Are you the one that does, I mean, we would talk to you in the coaching program?
Absolutely. I do it every week.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, it's me. I am, as of right now, I'm the only one that does it. If it grows enough at some point, you know, people like Chelsea and we have other FNTPs and other practitioners that we partner with. At some point, we may have somebody else do it just because we would have to. But I can foresee
right.
for a long time it will just be me doing it. And I love doing it.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time, Kevin.
You are welcome. And I know it's a lot. I know it's overwhelming. Take some time and digest all that information. And then, by all means, call me anytime. Here's another thing. Because I've just overwhelmed you with information, a good thing for you to do right now, always have a little pad of paper and something to write with on you. And when you think of a question, write it down and then call me. I'll answer them all.
Okay.
All right. I'll look forward to
that
it.
That sounds good.
Get back to work.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome. All right. I know that was a long call, but in my mind, those are the most important calls I take. People who have gotten to a point where they're sick, which is almost everybody anymore. It's almost impossible to make it to 30 anymore without having something if you're eating the standard American diet, but who have gotten to the point where I feel like they're willing to listen. And if I can convince them, and it's not easy. We talk about this. This is one of the things we all struggle with. We learn this. We try it. We see the results. And as good human beings, we want to share it with the people we love. But it is so hard to overcome this brainwashing and programming we have all been to our whole life. Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, welcome.
Howdy.
What's on your mind today?
So, well, my wife went to the hospital yesterday to get kidney stones blowed up because it wasn't really a kidney stone. It was more like a kidney rock.
Oh, boy.
According to one scan, it was 13 millimeters, and according to the other scan, it was 17 millimeters, which is 3/4 of an inch, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, but when we got to the hospital, yes, actually they called us, oh, we've had some cancellations, can you come early? Because they weren't going to do it till like 2:30 or something, and we
okay.
got in 2 hours earlier, so that was a blessing. So we get up there, fill out the paperwork, all that BS, and then get in there and put on that sexy gown with the show your ass cleavage. And so
yeah.
The nurse or assistant, whatever she was, she takes my wife's blood pressure, and I'm looking, and she says, oh, that's kind of weird. She said, and I'm looking right at it, and I see it 133 over 50. I said, you should take her blood pressure again. I said, something didn't go right.
That's a little odd.
Yeah, well, that's because my wife's blood pressure does not. She has been that low, but that was after she had her hip replacement. Well, this nurse just, oh, I'll take it later. Yeah, whatever. I said, you should
yeah.
probably take it again. She, another nurse came around, and I said, could you take my wife's blood pressure again? Because we got a weird reading before. Oh, yeah, I can take it. So it was like 127 over 82 or something like that.
Okay.
But it was a lot more normal. And it didn't take long to blow her kidney stones up, but they always ask the same questions. What medications are you on? What's your cholesterol and heart disease and all of this bullshit? I'm getting to the point where I just about got to put duct tape over my mouth before I go in there because it's friggin' annoying.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It seems like they just want to get her on any and every, because she's 70 years old, they just want to get her on every and every medication that
that 70-year-olds are normally on.
It is the point
of our entire medical system at this point is just to prescribe more drugs. It's the whole point of the system.
Yeah, well, it seems like the shocked and astounded that, oh, what daily medications are you on? And she takes melatonin to try and help her sleep, but she didn't sleep worth a shit last night. So let's
go back to my last call, and let's explore this. I have to believe that kidney stones and gallstones did not exist in hunter-gatherers at all. Because in order to form a stone, we have to have oxalates. There are a couple other things in plants that could do it. You have to have oxalates to form the stone. Let me read this. Meat, chicken, and fish are not sources of oxalate. Milk, hard cheese, yogurt, ice cream, sour cream, cream cheese, cottage cheese, buttermilk, custard don't contain oxalates. Chocolate milk, however, has 7 milligrams in one cup. Why? Because where does chocolate come from? A plant.
Okay.
There are no oxalates in animals.
Well, I think that she does like it rum and coke. I think she's saving up all that coke and turning it into kidney stones.
Well, we could say that if you ate a true carnivore diet, it would virtually be impossible to form a kidney or a gallstone.
Well, she sort of got to the point where she doesn't like meat, but one thing she really does like is chicken livers.
Oh, good. Good, eat them.
So, like, she'll, you know, I don't know what size it's probably a pint or something. Chicken livers. So I raced into the grocery store on the way home yesterday, and I saw them there, and it's like, oh, she likes them. I'll get them. So got home, she put half in the freezer, and she's going to eat the other half of the container today. So
Now, let me qualify just so people know, we're not talking about deep-fried breaded chicken livers. You see those, that's the way you're going to find them. And right. Yeah.
Yeah, she froze. She'll put lard in the iron skillet and chuck them in there.
One of my favorite foods is chicken liver pate. I love chicken liver pate.
So just grind it up.
Pretty much, yeah. You put some cooked onion and garlic and some spices and some other things, and then you basically just make a chicken liver pudding kind of.
Okay. I'm sort of willing to try anything. She's like, well, what are you going to have for dinner last night? And because she wasn't feeling very hungry. So she sort of did a 24-hour fast because she wasn't allowed to eat before the operation.
Right.
So she hadn't eaten anything since about 6:30 Monday night through to last night. Just so she did about 23-hour fast, but
yeah, good.
I don't know what drugs they got her on, but she didn't, and that she was out like a light when they give her the anesthetic, but she wasn't out for long. They took her in about 1 o'clock, and by about 2:30 she was out and pretty much ready to come home. But
yeah,
she was up all night, pretty much. She laid down to go to sleep, but she didn't go to sleep. But yeah, crazy. So
yeah, yeah. Oh, the other key ingredient in chicken liver pate is a lot of butter.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we like butter. Carrie Gold is our friend. So,
that's right. Yeah. Oh, come on! You should be eating Red Feather.
Yeah, well, when I go back to New Zealand, next time I might bring a case of it. Oh, and there you go. about flying. So maybe your go prepared. Maybe your carry on should be a parachute.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Any luggage, sir? I got one check on, one carry on. We need to open. No, it'll open on if I need to deploy. It'll open. So.
That's right.
They might not let you on the plane though if you show up with a parachute. They might think you're some sort of terrorist or something.
Yeah, you're right.
So, okay, I'll carry on, but I'll
all
just
right.
tell her to eat more chicken liver.
There you go. Yeah, chicken liver, good, and then go find her a recipe for chicken liver pate with lots of good butter in it. Let's go to Ohio. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. So I've been having digestive issues.
Yeah, like everybody just about.
Yeah, I'm trying to recover from the standard American diet.
Right. And the standard American diet over time will destroy our digestive system.
It already took my gallbladder, so.
Yep.
Back in December, I was diagnosed with diverticulitis, and I started trucking last year, and I've been doing it for about a year now. And it's been a big lifestyle change, so and I want to. It's interfered a lot with work. I've been off work for about 3 or 4 weeks now. I'm hoping to return to work in 2, and keep pursuing this. So I got my CDL permit, and I'm trying to get my license this year.
Good.
And,
congratulations.
Thanks. I was trying to be there and make sure I'm dependable and reliable for my boss and my family.
Yeah.
Because they said it showed up on CT scan as a mild case. I'm supposed to meet with a general surgeon this upcoming Monday to discuss how the 4 rounds of antibiotics since December have gone and whether or not he wants to do a colonoscopy and if I need surgery. Because he called it smoldering diverticulitis.
Okay.
So
what's your question for me?
My question is to get back on the road, like, what's the best way to recover from this? Because I'm probably going to manage it for, assume, the rest of my life to make sure it doesn't flare up.
Instead of trying to, what the doctors will tell you, they'll use words like manage it, control it. How about if I tell you how to just cure it and it won't come back?
Absolutely.
And I don't care what the doctors tell you that you can't and blah, blah, blah. There is an absolute perfect diet for this condition.
Mm.
Guess what it is?
My boss has been telling me to go carnivore.
Boy, you got a smart boss. He's absolutely 100% correct. There is no faster way to fix this.
He's listening right now.
There is no faster way to fix this.
And
it will
grains,
fix it.
Sugars. Okay.
Absolutely. Everything but meat. It's much easier for me to say, I'm not going to tell you all the food you shouldn't eat.
Right.
Because the list goes on and on and on and on. All I have to say is everything you eat or as close as possible, none of us do this 100%, should be an animal product.
And
meat,
I was listening to
eggs,
calls,
fish.
Calls ago. You're talking about the inflammation and cutting down on all that.
Right.
That's where I think my inflammation is subsiding now, and I'm ready to get back to work here in hopefully 2 weeks. I can give you a call back, and so I'm going to start today, go strict carnivore, and I got to eat a lot of eggs until I get back on the road. But like when I'm back on the road, so I'm on the road generally about 3 to 5 days a week.
Do
so
you have,
way to live
before
on the
we
road.
Get to, before we get to how you're going to eat on the road, do you have symptoms?
Okay. Currently, not right now. Monday, I had a bowl of chili, and it really, the results
no,
were
I,
really
I,
good.
Yeah, I don't mean every minute of every day, but do you have symptoms that there is something wrong in your gut?
Yeah, not currently. It's subsided a lot, but I had an internal bleeding back in December.
Okay.
But currently,
so,
no.
My guess is it will take about 7 to 14 days, and you will start to notice you're not having the symptoms anymore.
Okay.
30 would absolutely do it. I don't know. Because I'm a little confused because they say it's a mild case. Then they use the word smoldering. I don't know where the hell they get that. Then they're talking
That's
about the surgery and bleeding. I guess this is a mild case because people are certainly worse, but this sounds kind of horrendous to me.
Right, yeah, it's definitely painful and taking a lot of, you know, start of the year, it's just not how I thought it was going to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I would venture to say it's possible you'll see results in 7 days. You'll certainly see something in 14. And I believe if you could stay mostly carnivore for 30, you'd be shocked at how much better you feel.
Okay. I feel like I could probably sign up for the coaching program continues further in there.
Yes. Yeah, we could certainly do that.
Because it's a lifestyle change I'm going to stay committed to.
Yeah, and that's the kind of, again, I can give you some clues right now on how to eat on the road. In fact, if you're willing to do some work, eating on the road will become much, much easier and less time-consuming, much cheaper, and about 1,000 mm-hmm. times healthier. And
yeah, absolutely.
You need to learn one skill, and it's not that hard to learn. I could teach it to you in about 10 minutes. I have a video on it.
Okay.
You need to learn how to can meat.
Okay.
And you can buy a canner that will do this for $100. I mean, I have a mm-hmm. really nice all-American. Mine probably costs $400 or $500. But you can buy some decent canners on the market for about $100. And it will take mm-hmm. you, all in start to finish, maybe 4 or 5 hours over a weekend to can enough food to last you for 3 months. On the road.
Okay. I got to get a culinary background, so it shouldn't be too hard to pick up.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. You will pick this up in a heartbeat.
Awesome. And we got some family members. My fiance grew up Mennonite Amish, so there's family members that still can. So.
Do you like pulled pork, shredded beef, that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. Just had pulled pork yesterday.
So here's the beauty of this. I just ate this. This was my dinner last night. I opened up a jar of pork that I smoked first for about 4 hours on the smoker, and it's not even cooked completely through at that point. And then I take it off the smoker, I cube it down to like 1-inch cubes, pack it into the mason jar, pour bone broth over it, seal it, and can it. And it will come out like smoked pulled pork. And the beauty of it is, in the truck, it's completely shelf-stable for years. I canned mine in 2019, and it's been sitting in my pantry since. And you open it up and eat it. It's cooked. You want to warm it up? Sure, that makes it taste better. A minute in the microwave, and I have some of the best hot pulled pork I can find anywhere. And it was cheap, and it was easy, and it's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
And how much easier is it when you're in the truck than just opening a jar, microwaving it for a minute, and eating it? Another good food on the truck, hard-boiled eggs.
Okay.
Jerky, another good food.
Yeah.
Do you like seafood?
Yeah. Yeah, I like some seafood, not a whole lot of shellfish, but I like
fish. How about, like, sardines? Ever tried sardines?
Never really tried them.
Man, I love sardines. Canned mackerel, canned smoked salmon, that's the easiest food possible because it's already canned for you and shelf-stable. I don't know why we don't can more meat and sell it.
My boss works by a can of tuna. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah, those mm-hmm. are easy. That's why we sell canned seafood in our store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, I will, give this a try and give you a call back 2 weeks with my results.
Another good one, bacon. Cook it at home. Bacon is will last a long time if you have a tiny little refrigerator, even a cooler in the truck. Cooked bacon will last a long time.
Yeah, I was taking about 3 pounds a week out on the road with me when I was working there.
Yeah, one of the things, if people are going to be gone longer, maybe a couple weeks, one of the strategies I like is just pre-cook the meat you're going to eat for maybe the first 3 or 4 days. I mean, most meat is going to be, if you have a refrigerator, it's going to be fine for 3 or 4 days, probably 5 or more, really. But without pushing it, I make something I call meat cookies. I will take a couple pounds of ground beef, the fattiest I can find, and then I'll add ground sausage for even more fat and flavor. I'll combine those two. I'll make kind of like little hockey puck size or maybe even smaller patties. Mm-hmm. I'll put as many as I can on sheet pans and throw them in the oven and bake them. And I leave them rare so that I can microwave them like 30 seconds and not overcook it. And
just bring them up in time.
I'll do the same thing with sausage links and bacon. Just throw it all on a sheet pan and throw it in the oven. It's really easy to cook big quantities like that. And that's the food I'll eat for the first 3 or 4 days. And then I'll and hard-boiled eggs during that time. And then if I'm out longer, that's when the canned meat starts to cook in. And I can carry enough canned meat in a truck to last me like 3 months probably.
Awesome. All right. I got some work to do before I get back to work, and
there you go.
That's fine. You know, get healthy and keep trucking.
All right, and I want to hear back from you.
I appreciate it. Will do, Kevin. Thank you.
All right, talk to you soon. Let's go to Texas. Kenneth, welcome.
Yes, sir. Kevin, can you hear me?
I can. Can I help you with today?
I love your show. I appreciate all of your advice and long-time listener.
I had
an incident this morning making my NDK coffee. My dropper on my DK emulsion bottle came off, and I dumped about half, three-quarter of a teaspoon into my morning coffee.
Okay.
So my question is, do I need to skip for a couple of days and then go back? I'm doing 5 drops a day.
Yeah, I would skip if you said like maybe a half, three quarters of a teaspoon, I might skip like 3 days.
Okay.
Vitamin D is a fat soluble vitamin, so our body stores it. A lot of vitamins and minerals are water soluble, and we need to consume them more often because we flush them out of our body. But fat soluble vitamins, which are A, D, E, and K, those store in our body. So the amount you just took in will make up for the fact that you don't need to take it for 3 or 4 days.
Okay. That was the thought I had. I just wanted your opinion.
Yep. You were right.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. That was an easy one. Let's go to Florida. Nick, welcome.
Hey, Kevin. I've been doing the carnivore for about 6 months now. Pretty religious on it. Occasionally I'll drink a beer, but that's about it. Having trouble getting into ketosis and getting the last 5 or 10 pounds of fat off me. I was drinking a fair amount of milk and just recently tried to stop doing that, see if that would help. My diet usually consists of bulletproof coffee in the morning with 2 tablespoons of butter, the coconut oil, and probably 2 tablespoons of heavy cream. And I also will usually cook about 3 eggs and do either some bacon or sausage, something like that. And then later on in the day, probably noon or so, eat like 2 or 3 meat sticks and a couple cheese sticks, and then have a piece of meat for dinner. Sometimes I'll have a little kimchi or an avocado.
Got it.
That's about it. That's, so,
well, the diet is just about perfect, really. I mean, if that's the way you're eating, we're not going to make any changes to that. That's really a good way to eat. So are we talking about you're trying to measure ketones and you're just not seeing them?
Yeah, I rarely am able to get past the 1.0 level.
Well,
the other day,
are you getting like 0.6, 0.7, that kind of stuff?
Yes.
That's nutritional ketosis.
Okay. All right. I thought you wanted to try to
be
between 1 and 2.
No, I believe the scientific number is 0.7, if I remember right.
Okay.
But I don't I don't really care too much about it, because here's another question I would ask you. Do you feel the benefits of ketosis?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it used to be before I got on carnivore, you drink your cup of coffee and by 10, 11 o'clock, you're ready to take a nap. Now I go all day long without even needing another cup of coffee or nothing. So I definitely feel the benefit.
Are you at the weight you'd like to be at?
That's it. I'd like to lose another 5 or 10 pounds, and I lost the first 15 or so really quick, and I'm assuming that was mostly just the water weight.
So it seems
like I can't get the little bit off.
No, you weren't carrying that much water weight. You lost fat. You did lose water weight, but you lost fat with that as well. What you didn't lose was muscle, which is good. I have a couple thoughts on this. One, it's possible, and we're about to get continuous ketone monitors here in the States. I'm hoping I could get one right now. If I have a couple people in Canada, you can get them there. And I have a couple listeners who said, hey, ship it to us. And even they run in this area where I live, and they'll bring it to me, or they would ship it to me or whatever. So if I really wanted one, I would get one. I just haven't done it because I've just been so damn busy. Once we get that, I'm hoping I'm going to learn more about this, because I've tried to learn as much as I can using finger sticks and Keto Mojo over and over and over. And my God, is it confusing. Blood sugar is much easier to understand. I have a theory that a lot of times what we're doing is we're producing ketones and then we're burning them before we can measure them. Our body uses ketones. That's why we produce them. Our brain loves ketones. So I have a feeling that we are producing them and consuming them faster than we can measure them. And that's all that's happening. So when we see, we know what the benefits are. Our hunger drops, our energy levels go through the roof, our brain fog clears up, we feel mentally better. You know, when I'm producing ketones, I'm happier. So as long as I see those benefits, I'm not going to get too crazy about whether I can measure it on a device.
Right. Well,
another
good
piece
of
news while we're talking about this, the FDA just cleared continuous glucose monitors to now be sold over the counter. You will now, pretty soon, you'll be able to walk into a drugstore and just buy a continuous glucose monitor and put it on. Don't need a doctor, don't need a prescription, don't need somebody to approve it. You'll just be able to walk into a store and buy one. That is awesome. And at some point, I hope we get there with continuous ketone monitors. And with that, we could measure this stuff easily anytime we want.
For me was, so Monday, I didn't eat breakfast, but I did have the coffee. I had some meat and cheese sticks. And then at the end of the day, about 8 o'clock, I checked it, and it was 1.8, which was the highest I've ever seen. And I'm like, okay, sweet. Okay, maybe the milk was causing, you know, to make carbohydrates in the milk or whatever.
It could be.
And then yesterday, pretty much the same thing, except I had some breakfast that day. Checked it yesterday, and I was at 0.8. And I didn't, I had zero
carbs.
This
is why I'm confused. Right. This is why I'm confused. That's what keeps happening no matter how many times I test. When I think they should be high, sometimes they're non-existent. When I think, oh, I can't possibly be producing ketones now, they're 2.2. It is really hard for me to find any kind of consistent pattern.
Okay.
But
so moral
I will
story
tell
is
you
don't worry about the numbers so much.
It was very common in the beginning when we were first trying to learn about blood glucose with finger sticks. We had some of those same issues. I didn't understand why sometimes my blood sugar was higher until I realized stress can cause your blood sugar to raise. We never figured that out. I mean, I had read it, but I could never see it in the finger sticks. But I could see it on the continuous monitor.
Right. Okay. All right. Well,
so,
I'll just keep at it then.
I would just keep doing what you're doing because your diet is excellent. And you're feeling the results of ketosis. So now I will tell you that last 10 pounds, sometimes that last 10 pounds will come from activity, not diet.
I gotcha. Right. Yeah, I could step that up for sure. What do you feel? As far as a person should have? Should they have some fat reserve? I mean, obviously you're going to have some fat reserve, but what's a healthy level?
I'm glad you said that, because I have a feeling this last 10 or 15 pounds we all feel like we should be using or losing, it might be our body saying, hey, that's not a good idea. In times of starvation,
right,
you would like some reserves. And we, as hunter-gatherers, we evolved with times of starvation. It was common. So I have a theory that maybe that last 10 or 15 pounds is our body saying, look, you just don't want to be that lean. Now, in our world today, if we want to be that lean, we can be. We're not in any risk of starvation. But I think our body is saying, look, that could be dangerous to be that lean.
Right. All right.
And here's something else I have found. When I get down to that low, low level of fat, where I've only got about 6 or 7% body fat, maybe 8 or 9, I don't feel as good. I've said this before. I can get down to about 140 pounds right now. And it wouldn't even be hard. I weigh about 150 most of the time. I could lose that last 10 pounds. I've done it a bunch of times. I just don't like it. I don't feel as good there, and I just kind of trust my body that I'm feeding it all the right foods, I'm doing all the right things, and this is the weight my body seems to want to stay at. All right, let's go to New York. Justin, welcome.
Hey, Kevin, this is Justin. Hey, I guess you answered almost all the questions that other guy had there about the ketone levels, because that's what I was going to ask too, is because I went on that 6 day, I went on a 6 day fast. I had to work on the semi truck, so I decided to eat on the 6 day, so I had some energy to work on the semi truck on Saturday, you know. So I was shooting for a 7 day, but yeah, I never, like, my ketone levels, I do have the Keto Mojo. My ketones always hover right around 3 or 0.3, and then when I went on that, like, day 4, day 5, day 6, it was 1.7, 1.5. And
so,
I'm like, oh, man, now we're getting somewhere. But then I ate, and it dropped it down to 0.3 again.
While I was talking to the last caller, I was about to say, if you just need to see those ketones on your meter, try fasting. That will usually do it. And, by the way,
right,
congratulations on a 6 day fast. That's awesome.
Thank you. It was a lot easier than I expected. I cheated because I gorged myself there on the day one, you know, or day zero with, you know, ribeyes, eggs, and bacon.
Yeah, here's something else to remember about this. Our body producing ketones was a survival mechanism.
Right. Yep,
because
yep.
if there was no food available, our glycogen stores would drop so low that we would die. Our brain would stop functioning. Once it ran out of glucose or glycogen, it would stop functioning and we could die. Ketones,
right,
and our body's ability to take protein and convert it to glucose, those were survival mechanisms that kept us alive when there was no food. So that's why when we go multiple days without food, our ketone levels will rise.
Yep. I just have, I don't know what it is. I wonder if I got something, because I haven't lost any weight either since I went back on the carnivore diet. So I've been trying to lose weight, and it just seems like it's not happening, and I don't know. I don't know if I got to get some blood work done and see what's going on or what. But
It could be stress. There does seem to be a pattern that a lot of people go through, that they start keto or carnivore, they lose a ton of weight just like we expect. Sometimes they hit a stall and we're not sure why. Or if you fall off the wagon, I've seen this happen a lot of times. I can't figure out why it's happening, but it's a very common pattern. You go back and it doesn't work as good right away the second time. And sometimes a month later, all of a sudden the weight loss will start again. Or 2 weeks.
I have seen that pattern. Yeah, I fell off the bandwagon pretty hard because I was listening to other people, and I decided to man up again and prove them wrong this time. So
exactly.
I remember you talking about that for probably 2 years ago. You were mentioning that.
Yeah.
People that fell off the bottom bandwagon, it's harder to get back up again. And I told myself I wasn't going to do it, but I did it.
I know. We all do. Really, we all do.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So, but yeah, I was just curious because, like, I watched the Keto Mojo information video on ketones and glucose, blah, 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 to try to learn, you know. And I didn't really catch on to when you were supposed to check for ketones, but I just do it once a day and or maybe
so
twice a day, depends if I remember. But
when I get that urge to see ketones on the meter, I have figured out one pattern that makes it much more likely for me to see them. It's not a guarantee. If I stop eating early today, like if I were to really want to see it, I might stop eating at like 4 o'clock this afternoon. And then tomorrow morning, I would get up and put a big healthy dose of brain octane into my coffee. And then I would measure ketones an hour after I finished that coffee. That is the one pattern. It's not totally consistent, but I have gotten my highest readings from doing that.
I see. Yeah, I stopped drinking coffee, too, at the beginning of the month because I need to do a – I wonder because I'm not man enough to drink black coffee, so I have to use creamer.
You know,
doing that before, and it was okay. Well, I still lost weight and everything, but what's the interesting thing?
I started drinking black coffee when I was 14 because I got my first job at 14 was at a Perkins restaurant. And I had to start at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I just started drinking coffee. And the first couple of days it was cream and sugar. And honestly, I was so lazy. I hated the whole process. I said, I don't care how bad it tastes. I'm just going to pour it into a cup and drink it because I need the caffeine. And I drank black coffee my whole life. Since I've been drinking Bulletproof for so long, I like the taste of black coffee a lot, but I miss the fat. It's like too thin for me now, and there's no body, and it's not satisfying. Love the taste, but man, I just crave that fat in there. So in the afternoon, sometimes I just want a cup of coffee, and instead of butter and coconut oil, I'll put in heavy cream.
I gotcha. Yeah, I've tried cream, I've tried all that, and that's definitely not my cup of tea. I'd rather just not drink it or drink it with French vanilla creamer. But
you know, if brain octane has absolutely been proven to produce ketones. I mean, that's why we
right.
have it in
I
our
do
store.
Have some
one
of that.
Our,
yep. I,
yeah. The, yep. You know, another good way of using brain octane. Use it like olive oil.
Oh, really?
Make salad dressing with it. Just pour it over anything you're eating. It has no taste.
Right.
Just put
right.
it. You know, if somebody made me eat a boneless, skinless chicken breast, I'd be pouring brain octane on it. I got to add fat to something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You make salad dressings with it. You can make sauces with it. You can cook with it. You just, you know, pour some on your food and eat it.
I will have to definitely keep that in mind, for sure.
If you could do it, it sounds a little weird, and I've never tried it. But if you wanted a simple way, do a shot.
I was just thinking that myself. I'm like,
just do a shot.
Just do a shot real quick. Get it done and over with. See you later. Bye. Have a good day.
Here's a way you could actually make it a little more palatable in a shot and actually add some more benefits. Start playing around with a mixture of brain octane and raw apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, I could do that.
That's basically a vinaigrette. When you hear the word vinaigrette, like a salad dressing of vinaigrette, that's all a vinaigrette is acid and oil.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's a vinaigrette. And there's actually a ratio, the French, because vinaigrette is French. And I forget, I used to know it by heart. I think it might be 3 parts oil to 1 part acid, or maybe it's 4. But I don't care about the ratio because I'm just going to mix it the way I like it. And I like things more acidic. So I could handle more apple cider vinegar in there, but make that and just do a shot of it.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to try that out. I know I didn't know how to make barbecue sauce until you said it on the air today, so I definitely can't wait until I get home to try that.
There you go.
So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was it. That's all I got for today. I was just curious on that, when I should check for, you know, ketone levels and blah, 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 blah. But I know it's like it says, it always says around 0.3, but
yep.
I said,
yep.
But
like I say,
we'll see what happens.
I'm hoping that this is just, well, not really. Honestly, this isn't a big deal to me. Not as
right.
big as it used to be. If we're getting the benefits, then I don't care so much about that meter. It's
yep.
nice when
yeah,
we're
I mean,
getting started because it can help me
yep.
tell when somebody is getting fat adapted. But once you're fat adapted and you understand and you can feel the benefits, then I have not measured my ketones in months, I'm sure. And I
right.
won't do it again until I can get my hands on a continuous ketone monitor. And then I'll do it just so I can learn about this.
I gotcha. Yep. Yeah, like I mean, I feel great. You know, I've been doing the carnivore since January. I just haven't lost any weight. And I just don't know why. And like I said, I meal prep. Except for last week, obviously, I did a 6-day fast. But I meal prep and I eat animal products. So.
I can tell you this, that we have clearly identified a pattern. We started helping people with this back in like 14 or 15, somewhere around there. I forget the exact year. We had really, really consistent results almost across the board until 2020. And then we started
right.
seeing some people who started to gain some weight, even though they hadn't changed their diet, couldn't lose weight as easily as they used to, or can't lose weight at all sometimes. And we've identified it as stress. Nobody can deny that our lives have become extremely more stressful since 2020, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I went on my own at the end of the year of 2023, so, I mean, I have had extra stress.
That's a little bit of stress, yeah.
So that's all I got for today. So thank you for everything you do, and thanks for the hard research you do that I don't have to do. So
you're welcome. Thanks for the support. I appreciate it. Let's go to Nebraska. Grant, welcome.
Hello. I called in. Well, it's been a couple months ago now, and ordered the coffee kit and meat sticks and the air cheese and ordered all kinds of stuff. And
good.
I've noticed a big difference. I used to have an energy drink a day.
Okay.
Gave that up for Christmas. Don't even buy them anymore.
Good.
I've had one sip of soda since Christmas because I forgot to get a cup, get water at the big box store when my wife wanted her sugar-free soda that I keep telling her not to get, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Good. And now I just got to figure out the right time to get the subscription for the coffee because I was making it, and then before I knew it, ran out of parts and had to wait a couple of days, and you could notice when you don't have it for that couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah.
I called, I don't remember, a month ago maybe, about the CMC. I'm a company driver, two small
okay.
children. Not ready to be gone all this, a week, whatever. My wife
right.
wants me around to help with the kids. I want to help with the kids. The usual family stuff.
Yeah.
You said you are for education, and I agreed with you. I'm still trying to figure out if I can make it in a week or not. One character flaw is procrastination, so why do it ahead of time when you can do it at the last minute?
Oh, boy, I am so bad at that. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. I'm also part of the coaching. I'm working on getting my personal finance stuff together so I can submit it and figure out what I'm doing wrong other than I like to buy stuff and not save money. I got
okay.
company 401k, I got a personal 401k, I got I have two life insurance policies. My wife has two life insurance policies, and I think it goes against what Dave Ramsey our baby steps. So I need to submit that and go with you in person.
We can certainly do that, and that, you know, we can spend a lot of time on that on coaching. My first question would be, why two life insurance policies?
Because I didn't know any better, and I listened to the insurance guy when I was like, well, we have kids. I guess we need something for – and I looked at the differences, and I'm like, yeah,
No, you already explained
and I need to be more active.
Because you listen to life insurance salesmen. That's all I need to know.
And after listening to you here recently and Dave Ramsey's books a couple times, I'm like, all right, I need to change this up. We need to do it the right way, not what we're doing.
Does your wife work outside the home? I know she works. Does she work outside the home?
Yeah.
Okay. So you should each have a term life policy on yourself to replace your income. We should really change the name. It's not life insurance. We can't insure that you're not going to die.
It's
income replacement insurance. And if we would have called it that, people would have understood what the purpose is. We treat life insurance like some sort of damn lottery. Oh, look, if somebody dies, I get $1 million. How sick is that?
Yeah.
No, we buy this to ensure that we can maintain a lifestyle for our children and support them. And all we're trying to do is replace somebody's income. That's why the idea of these companies that push life insurance for your children make me ill. That is just criminal.
Yeah, it's not like we want our kids to die.
That is just criminal in my mind that we even have life insurance for children.
Although my little boy is 2.5, and I don't want him to die, but there's times I wish he had a power button.
Yeah, that's the terrible twos, all right.
Oh, yeah, he's earning it. But anyway, so with the CMC, it's going to be a few years before trucks and authority, all that.
Okay.
Am I better off to stick with the coaching?
Don't.
And not do
the CMC? Don't do the CMC right now.
Okay.
There's so much information, and it's like anything. If you learn it and then you don't have a way to really use it, you are going to forget most of it. It happens to all of us.
Yeah.
Here's a good example. You know, I mentioned that Chelsea is going through the FNTP program right now, my daughter, and I'm helping her with it, trying, but I'm struggling because I took it 7 or 8 years ago, and I brag about this program all the time. I loved it. I am the number one referrer in the country to that program, and I no longer I still recommend it. A couple of things have happened. One, the original founder, who is a personal friend of mine, Gray Graham, the guy who started the NTA and the whole program, retired. And since he retired, the program has changed in ways that I don't agree with. And
similar to Atkins diet.
Yeah, exactly. And if Gray were still a part of this, I believe it would have changed in a different way. I believe that Graham would have been on the same path that I've been on, and this would be teaching a lot more carnivore kind of stuff. And they're really not doing that. But since I don't use a lot, I mean, I learned a ton of stuff in that program. Most of it I don't use anymore because now it's getting kind of easy. Hey, look, forget all that shit I used to talk about. Eat carnivore. How easy is that? So I'm trying to help her, and I'm struggling. She'll look at me, and she'll ask me a question, and I'll go, hell, I don't know. And what I'm trying to help her with now.
Am I the last call, or you got more calls?
I have a ton more calls. I'm probably not going to get through them all, but I'll stick with you for a second. Here's what I'm trying to help Chelsea with. I'm trying to tell her, look, for a lot of this material, and I'll even kind of point out what material, all I really want you to do is just try to memorize it right before the test. But here's the material I want you to really start learning and understanding, because this is what you're going to use in the real world.
Yep. Well, my boss, he started almost 500 pounds, all kinds of pills. It looked like a candy dispenser in the morning.
I'll bet.
Pills, cellulitis, high blood pressure, like you name it, he had it.
Yeah.
Whole collection.
Yep.
And whatever caused him to decide to change, good for him.
Yeah.
Sauna, infrared sauna, heat exposure, cold. He can do a cold shower for like 2 minutes now.
Excellent.
Elliptical. But he's taking the Moderna, whatever, some kind of injection. I told him about your guys' program a while ago, and
yeah.
But he's already down 100 pounds.
He's probably taking Ozempic or Mounjaro. Grant, did we lose you? Uh-oh. Grant?
That's a big number.
There you are.
Yep. I'll let you get the other calls.
Okay. We will talk to you again soon. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Illinois. Brandy, welcome.
Thanks, Kevin. I have a Garmin watch, and since the last time I spoke with you, I was telling you I was doing 58 miles an hour. And, you know, the time change thing that takes place every year. I wasn't sure what my Garmin watch was going to do, so I looked at it, and it kind of says, you're stressed. Oh. And
yeah.
I was just thinking, what caused it? So if you've ever been on 54 in southwest, northeast, the southern route when Interstate 80 and 70 is a little snowy,
right.
It gets pretty congested. You're going 55 and you're in the way. And so
right.
You've got trucks that are on your bumper. And you know that how much it takes to get around you. So I was thinking, I'm asking you, in this situation, as you suggest that we should go 55 or 58 miles an hour, what would you do?
The only thing I allow to determine my speed is my own choice. I don't change my speed for anybody else. Sorry.
Okay.
Now, here's what I will do when I'm traveling on two lane. If I have a truck come up behind me and ride so close, I know they want to get around me, I will slow down and move over onto the shoulder to make it easier for them, but I'm not going to change my speed for them. As long as I'm running a reasonable speed, and on two lane, 55 is completely reasonable in my book. And if you don't want to be behind me, I'll do everything I can to help you get around me, but I am not changing my speed.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did. I won't pull over the shoulder. I wouldn't trust that, but I did slow down to make it easier. But
well, when I say shoulder, I'm not talking about off the pavement. I'm talking
right.
about I'll use as much of the pavement as I can. I'll move as far over to the right as I can and slow down and let them know, hey, I'll make it easy. Come around me. But I'm not speeding
right.
up.
Yeah. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of that really caused the watch to tell me that I was stressed, because I don't normally do that. But because of this hourly thing that my company has done, it's like, well, I'm milking it. I'm taking it for everything. And that's what I've been doing lately.
Yeah.
I had an incident that happened that it's sort of a public service thing. As the one of those rest areas that only has the two porta potties that they're metal, they're permanent. And I went in and wanted to lock the door, but I couldn't get out. I kept pounding on it and pounding it. They had a number to call. But what I'm saying is, before you go in, make sure it opens. And you might want to take your phone in with you, lest
there
you find
go.
Yourself stuck. Yeah.
Hey, speaking of that.
That's it.
The house we're in, I hate to say this because I know people think I must live in some crazy giant mansion, but I don't. The house was 3,000 square feet when we bought it. We expanded it to 6,000. And I know that sounds big, but we did it to make it possibly be a bed and breakfast someday. And I did it while construction costs were down, and I did it while I had good cash flow. It was an investment. But the house is three stories, and it actually has an elevator, which is, people think, oh, my God, you have an elevator in your house. How crazy. But it's really not. It's more of a trend, and it's sad why it's becoming a trend. It's because people now in their 60s have a hard time going up and down stairs. So they're building these houses with residential elevators now. That's a growing trend. I would have never put one in, but it was already there when we bought the house. We basically use it for laundry because our bedroom's on the third floor and the laundry's on the first floor. So it makes a good laundry chute. Or I use it to move furniture floor to floor instead of trying to carry it upstairs. And when we first moved into the house, Lisa and I had been using cell phones for years. That was our only phone because we had been living in, you know, full-time on the road in RVs. And when I moved into the house, there was a phone in the elevator, and I didn't want to get phone service. Why do I need phone service? I have my cell phone. Until somebody told me if you have a residential elevator, it's a law or a zoning requirement. And I thought, well, that's crazy. There's the damn government telling me what I have to do again. Until one day, I was home alone, and I got in the elevator, and it just struck me, what happens if I get stuck? There's no escape hatch through the top of a residential elevator. There is no way out. And then I realized that's why there's a phone in the elevator, and we do actually have an active phone line on it.
Awesome. It was scary. I didn't know what I was going to do because it's the only two, and if there's no trucks there, nobody's going to know you're there. And
So
just think before you do it because you might not be getting out.
There you go.
Thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome. Good talking to you. Let's go. This is going to be our final call. I know we still have a bunch of calls on the line. We're just out of time. And our phone system now shuts off at the end of that third hour. And I do have a lot of work I got to go get done. So if you're on hold, sorry, we're not going to be able to get to you today. This will be our last call. We're going to go to Michigan. JJ, welcome. Oh, wait a minute. I got to hit the button.
Hey, Kevin.
There we go.
Hey, Kevin, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. First time caller. Short time listener too, so I found you a few months ago, and yes,
I love new listeners. How did you find us?
Well, I've been a truck driver for just 2 years now, and
okay.
I used to listen to podcasts about hunting and stuff like that because I love hunting. And one day, because I want to become a owner operator, so one day I was, you know, on the road, and I'm like, man, I'm listening to this stuff, and it's not going to help me at all for what I'm trying to do.
Right.
So I just searched for whatever trucking shows or podcasts, and you were the first one to pop out.
Ah, good.
So I'm still trying to catch up.
That's excellent.
Yes. So I'm listening on the Apple podcast, and then I hear about the ad, you know, the app and everything else. So now, right now, I have the app and everything. So,
I'm
part of Tribe too. So.
Well, thank you.
So I'm like, I learned more about trucking the last 3 months that I've been listening to you than all these 2 years that I've been driving around. So
excellent.
It's a good thing that I did that. But anyways, the reason for my call is see if you can recommend a vitamin D supplement for my wife.
Absolutely.
She got a blood test, I think, in January, and her level is down to 8.
Oh,
yes.
She is at so much risk of so many things right now.
Well, she's going through a lot of anxiety, stress.
Yes.
And,
yes. She will be much more susceptible to things like flu, cold, COVID, all of those things. Stress,
exactly.
Anxiety. That may be the lowest number I've ever heard.
Well, the thing of it is, she just went back to the doctor's last Thursday, and the doctor told her that she's lower than it was. She didn't tell her how low she was, but
wow.
How much low can you go, you know?
Whew. Okay, so here's the good news.
So they okay. Go ahead.
This is a win-win. So I want to say something, because you made a statement, and I love hearing this, that you learned more about being an owner-operator, about trucking in general, in you know, a couple weeks or a month than you had in 2 years. How much did that education cost you?
$0.
Right.
Well, actually, I paid, $30 to get on the tribe?
Oh, yeah,
nothing,
thank you for that. I'm actually a
company driver right now, because everywhere I was trying to look for, you know, to get a lease, whatever, everybody asked for a minimum of 1 year to 2 years
right.
experience. I'm like, how
right.
am I going to get experience if nobody's hiring me? But,
I know. So here's the thing. Here's our business model. I want to get this information to as many people as I possibly can. People who want to be owner-operators, people who want to get healthier, people who want to learn how to manage their finances better. My goal is to get that to as many people as possible. So we decided uh-huh. not to charge for our app, not to charge for our radio shows, because by not charging, we can reach more people. Had you found my podcast, but it was $10 a month, you might have moved on to a free
yeah.
one instead.
Well, I might have buy it, because I needed to, like I said, I need to learn, because you can ask people
yeah,
questions and nobody tells you anything.
I know.
Or,
so you
or
might
whatever
have
tells
because
you is wrong.
You were really motivated. But we also
correct.
Know there are a lot of people that the minute they saw there was a price, and we always think everything on the internet should be free, those people
yeah, that's
wouldn't
right.
get access. And I want people to
yeah,
at least
correct.
Listen. Listen to my show. If you like what I'm saying, fantastic. Some people hate the things I talk about. That's fine, too. But we have to pay the bills. I like to eat, and that costs money. So we have to make money somewhere. And we make it through our stores, through our subscriptions and the tribes. So my answer here, I'm going to give you the best vitamin D supplement on the market, and you're going to buy it in our store, and everybody wins. How's that sound?
Okay. Perfect.
So you're going to – in fact, I'll make this really easy for you. I will put you back
okay.
on hold when we're done.
Okay.
When I've answered all your questions, mm-hmm. I'll put you back on hold. Chelsea will make sure you know exactly what to order. You're going to order – ignore that voice back there if you can hear it. We still have time. It won't hang up on us, but it won't allow me to take any more calls after the show ends. That's why I had
okay.
to tell the other people we had to end. But I'm going to finish your call, and then I'm going to put you with Chelsea. So I can tell you this. She could walk in – her numbers are so low, she could walk into any health food store or even Walmart and buy almost any vitamin D supplement on the market, and it will make hers better. But
mm-hmm.
if you want the best supplement that's going to be the most effective and work the fastest, vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. If you were to take
okay.
a vitamin D supplement, but you didn't eat any fat within about a half hour of taking that supplement, your body wouldn't absorb it. There has to
okay.
be fat present for your body to absorb a fat-soluble vitamin like vitamin D. So our vitamin D is a liquid. It's like it's a drop. And we take like 3 to 5 drops a day. Your wife should in fact, I would say for the first week, your wife should take 10 drops a day. And then after that first week or so, back off to 5. And then 5 a day will be her dose. 5 drops out of this bottle. And it's... that is going to be your best source of vitamin D. And Chelsea, if you're listening, we need to make sure we get the DK. When you start supplementing vitamin D, you also have to start supplementing vitamin K2 with it in order for it to be optimal. So our drops, we have a drop that is D and K2 combined. And that's what I take every day. I put it in my coffee. You can drink it. You can get it in your body any way you want. Whatever works. You mix it water, coffee, tea. You could actually put five drops in your mouth. It doesn't taste very good, so I wouldn't do it that way. But that is going to take care of it. And I will tell you, whether you've had your number tested or not, since you're buying it, you should be taking five drops a day too, because I'm sure you're deficient. Probably not as bad as she is, but you are deficient. Everybody is, if they're not supplementing.
Okay. That's good. I can do that.
Perfect.
And because they prescribe her, obviously, as I've been listening to you, you know, it's all they do, prescribe medication.
Yeah.
And she's taking a pill that is a capsule that she takes it once a week, and it's, I guess, vitamin D3.
D3 is the proper form, not D2, so they at least get that right. They prefer to give a high dose once a week. It's kind of like I was talking to the earlier caller, that D stores in our fat, so we can do it that way. I don't prefer that because, again, if there isn't enough fat present, that shot is mostly, or the pill is once a week. It's a high dose is what it is. It's mostly
being wasted. It's 1,250 milligrams.
Yeah, it's mostly being wasted because there's not going to be enough fat present to absorb that much all at once. So
okay.
It is much better to take a daily dose and have it already in fat. And the other thing they didn't do is they didn't tell her to take K2, did they?
No, nothing.
That's a mistake.
Anything else but this, yeah.
Hey,
okay.
I have a question. Do you have any idea what that prescription vitamin D cost?
No, because she's got a good insurance.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He didn't tell me she paid anything off, you know, from you know, pocket. But I didn't even ask her. I didn't even thought of that.
The couple of times I've checked, the prescription vitamin D, which is inferior to our product in many ways, usually cost about 4 to 5 times more than what ours cost.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, like I said, I didn't ask her. I didn't thought of that.
Yeah.
But it just seemed odd to me, like, okay, if it's that low, why is only once a week? But I guess, like you said, it's a highly dose. So I mean,
yeah,
I guess
that's just their method. I see this all the time, and like most things doctors are doing, I disagree. It's not the right way to do this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's why I'm calling.
And
because
I
like,
will
you know,
tell you, I have cases where people are on that high dose that was prescribed, and it's expensive, and we tell them, don't just trust this after you've been doing it for a couple of weeks or 30 days. Go back and retest. And many times their level has not changed because the doctor forgot to tell them they have to have a lot of fat when they take this once a week, and they're just not absorbing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, when she got the test done, whoever did the test didn't tell her anything about, didn't even mention to her about the she was that low on her level until she went back to her doctor, and she told her, wow, how come they didn't even mention anything? So she just started to taking this medication last week.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I know. It's like, I'm like, since January, and you just found out?
Why do they bother putting people through a test and spending the money if they're not going to do anything when they see the results?
All they want is the money. It's all it is.
Yeah. That's pretty obvious.
I mean,
they don't care about anybody's health. I mean, did you
not
hear how excited I got? Not excited, but agitated would be a better word. When you told me her number was 8, the minute
yes,
I saw
I know,
that
yeah,
result,
I would
have been on the phone to her.
I don't know if her doctor was on vacation or whatever, but when she got the test done, but like I said, she just went back last Thursday, and that's when she started taking the medication.
Here's the range.
But it doesn't say anything
mine.
About fat or anything like you tell me right
no,
now. It just says take it with food once a week. That's
right.
That's all it says.
Right. Because they already accomplished their goal. They sold you a prescription medication. Transaction's over as far as they're concerned.
Correct.
Yeah. So let me give you the ranges just so you understand how bad that number is. The medical range, and if you look on your form, you may see this, is usually between 30 and 70. I believe
yeah,
the optimal
she showed me on the internet. Yeah, she showed me on the internet that, yeah, she's on the red. I'm like, down
yeah.
to the bottom.
Oh.
So what's the optimum?
I believe the optimal range and where I keep mine is 80 to 100. The
okay,
bottom
above
end of the range for them is 30, which to me is way too low, and she's at 8.
Correct. Yeah, no, she's way down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, like I said, supposedly she's been reading or searching online, you know, which is a lot of times, a lot of the stuff that you find online is not accurate, but she's, I mean, she's going through this. I mean, she's got lots of anxiety, stress,
yep.
you know, she doesn't sleep much at all. And, you know, it's just all the symptoms.
Yeah. Now I will tell you this. If she eats the standard American diet, vitamin D is going to help a lot, but it's not going to fix all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to help, and she absolutely needs to get that level up because it's dangerous. But it's not going to be a cure-all if she's still eating the standard American diet.
I know. I've been talking to her about, you know, since I started listening to you, I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, even myself, you know, I'm trying to clean my diet too, because I mean, we don't eat the standard. I mean, we're actually Mexican, so we need to eat the standard Mexican food. So,
hey.
But you know, modified Mexican food, because a lot of things
JJ.
You can find them here. Yeah,
JJ.
Yes.
If we eat what is the modern Mexican diet, it might actually be worse than the standard American diet. If you ate a more traditional, it would be a little better. The problem with the Mexican diet, it is way too high in corn and wheat.
Yeah, I know, especially because we eat a lot of tortillas.
and who doesn't love a good taco or an enchilada? Or I mean, come on, that's good eating.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
Now, let me give you a little bit of help.
Uh-huh.
Make one substitution. I still eat tacos, hard shell. I still eat fajitas. I use grain-free tortillas.
You know, I never heard of that until you mentioned that, and I haven't looked for them, but I never heard of that before. I'm like, how can it be grain-free tortillas?
I know. It's kind of crazy. I actually like them better now than a traditional tortilla. The family that started this, it's an awesome story. I love this story. A Mexican family. I think it might have been a daughter, or maybe it was the mother, developed some pretty severe autoimmune conditions, and she went and did the research and found out that it was the grains and the corn in her diet causing this, and she started working on these recipes to make tortillas, because nobody wants to give up their tortillas. I didn't either. So her first product was a grain-free soft tortilla shell. They now make hard shells. They make salsas. The company is called Siete. So look them up.
Siete, okay.
I love their story. I love the company. They keep growing and making new products. And I'm not wild about everything they make. They still make some like churro kind of things that are a little too high in sugar.
Yeah,
for
which
most
is
people.
which is flour, you know.
Well, theirs is grain free, but.
Oh, wow.
But it's got like the cinnamon sugar on it. It's a
dessert.
Yeah,
the sugar.
Kind of
a lot of sugar.
Right. So,
yeah, I know.
And theirs doesn't have as much as a traditional wood, but for most people, it's still going to be too much sugar. But I love the company. I love their products, and their tortillas are amazing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to look it up. Because, I mean, I know I'm going to struggle because this is what I've been eating my whole life. But,
right.
I mean, I really need to lose some weight. And you know, just, I love meat. I mean, I can eat meat all day. But, I got to give up everything else.
Pretty much.
So,
yeah. And here's a trick to that.
Mm-hmm.
What are your favorite dishes, or not, I don't even want to say a dish. What are your favorite meats?
Well, I love ribeye beef.
Excellent.
I like, you know, baby back ribs. I love
good.
Pork. Chicken, everything but the breast. It's too dry
exactly.
to me. I don't really like it. And then,
you know what my favorite part of the chicken is?
Chicken thighs.
That's my second favorite.
Okay. Chicken. Oh, yeah, I know. Chicken wings. You say that a lot.
No. Okay, let me rephrase that. Thighs would be my third.
Okay.
Wings would be my second.
Liver and gizzards?
Nope.
Neither that. I love those, too, but...
About the only way I cook chicken anymore is either wings... bone-in skin on thighs or a whole chicken. And when I cook a whole chicken, I will eat every single piece of the skin.
Yes, the skin. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
my favorite part.
That's where the fat
is. Exactly.
Oh, okay. Yes. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have never thought of that. I was going to say next, chicken drums.
Yeah. When I put a chicken on the smoker, or I put it in the oven to roast it, when I take it out, I will peel off every bit of skin, and that's all I'll eat right then is all of the skin.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, especially on a smoker.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right, well, yeah, if you can put me back to
on
hold, that way, you know, she can give me or tell me whatever I got to get. And, well, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for everything you do, and I'm looking forward to see you next week.
Well, fantastic. Make sure you come up and introduce yourself.
I will.
Okay.
I was going to, a quick question about the mats. I was looking on the website. It doesn't say anything about the parking. Is that parking in that place or no? I've never been there, so.
Truck parking or personal vehicle?
No, personal vehicle.
Yeah, you will be – so the event is held at the Expo Center, which is a big convention center with multiple buildings, but you park right there on site with a car. With a truck, the parking is off-site, but then they shuttles over.
Oh, okay. No, I'm driving. I'm actually driving from home, so.
It is paid parking, and I will tell you that Thursday's not too bad. Friday gets a little worse. Saturday is a nightmare trying to get in. The place backs up, and you got to wait in line to get through parking. And but you are parked right there at the convention center.
What time do they open the gates? I mean, I don't mind getting in earlier that way.
Then I
doing all that stuff.
Then I would get in earlier. You know, I think the show tends to open most days at like 11, and I would venture to say the gates are open really early first thing in the morning.
Okay. Yeah, because I know I imagine that it's going to be crazy, but I just don't want to get
this will be
you know
the, I may have lost count somewhere, and I know we missed the whole show for a couple years because of COVID, but this is like either my 33rd or 34th year at the show.
Oh, wow.
The show's been going on for more than 50.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
I
mean, I've been driving for 2 years, never, ever heard about it until I hear you talking about it. I'm like, wow.
I know people that have been driving for 40 years and have never gone. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. I used to be on the trades before. I was on the concrete industry, construction industry. And I went to the – I heard you talking about – I don't know if it was a live show or a couple years ago, because I've been listening to all your podcasts since 2002.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the concrete, World Concrete in Las Vegas.
That's right.
And you were like, yeah, why – what is it about concrete? Why do they need that much space? Well, it's just – I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but it's everything that's got to do with concrete – tools, equipment.
I know. That,
trucks.
I know.
I mean, it's just, it's crazy. I was there 2 years, 3 years ago, and it's just humongous. I mean, it's a lot to see. But
yeah,
I can't wait to go to Mets.
The reason I got exposed to it was a bunch of my friends from high school ended up in the concrete business. Almost all of them ended up running their own concrete company, and 1 year, one of them called me out of the blue. I hadn't heard from the guy from decades, and he reached out to me and he said, hey, I heard you're living in Orlando. And I said, yeah, why? And he said, well, I'm coming down for a big concrete show. I'm like, what, a big concrete show? And
I
was blown away. But that's what this show is like. It's big.
okay, well, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm hoping I can, you know, I'm sure I'm gonna learn a lot. And because I really, well, that's my goal. I wanted to become an owner operator. I'm glad I didn't buy a truck, because I've been trying to buy a truck for the last 2 years, not knowing anything about.
Nobody would sell
you one. I'm gonna be honest with you. I didn't know anything about trucks, and like I said, everything I know now is because of you.
Well, thank you. I'm gonna look forward to seeing
you
next week. Come find me.
All right, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Take care. All right, we have got to wrap this up. The system kicks us out at this point. So, boy, over three hours. Good day. I have got to get on with my day. We will be back here tomorrow and Friday. We only have one show next week. It's the Friday show, which I will be doing live from the truckstop.com booth. I am really looking forward to people filling up the CMC. I am going to be really disappointed if we have any seats left. I'm kind of a little shocked that honestly, based on, you know, things we've done in the past, I thought this thing would have filled up in a week. I think a lot of it might be the economy right now. People are a little worried about things or trying not to spend money. I get that. But if you ever want to, well, no, if you want to be an owner operator and you're considering buying your truck within the next year and a half, then you should come. Like the earlier caller, if it's longer than that, 2 or 3 years, don't come. That would not be a good idea. Wait till next year and do it. But if you plan on being an owner operator, or you're already an owner operator, I don't care if you've been doing it for 40 years. If you want to learn how to do it better, I promise you, you're going to learn things that you'll learn how to do it better. So let's fill this thing up. If you're on the fence, just do it. I promise you, you will not regret it. So don't let me down on this one. Let's fill this thing up. Things I will be doing at Matt's, I will be doing the live show from the truckstop.com booth. Same time we always do it, 11 o'clock Eastern, and we will be in the Eastern time zone. I think an hour that I'm doing with Brent Hutto on what they call the Pro Talk stage. It's like back-to-back seminars. They're like an hour. Actually, they're like 45 minutes each, because you got to switch and change, and that all takes time. But it's just back-to-back seminars. They call it the Pro Talks. I'm doing that and the CMC. I do have one other event, but it's a private event for a small fleet. I'm doing a keynote speech at a dinner. So I'm going to be busy. I'm looking forward to it. There's all kinds of – we have a reception on Wednesday night, kind of a meet-and-greet reception kind of thing after the CMC. But again, that's only for the people coming to the CMC. What I'm trying to tell you is I have a really busy schedule there, but I love meeting people from the tribe. So find me somewhere and introduce yourself. All right. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.